Mayo, we have big news to discuss this week, right?
We do indeed.
Yeah, we've now got dark mode on 9to5mac.com. It really was exciting. So this is something that people have wanted, I mean, really since Safari and the Mac could support dark mode automatically, you know, and really even before that, because you could always potentially pick a preference, you know, if you wanted to. Like Ars Technica has done this for a while, and Mac Stories, you know, joined whenever the kind of options were there in Mac OS and iOS. And now, as of the day before the Apple event that we're about to discuss at length, we've rolled out dark mode, and it's automatic, or you can set your preference, you know, one time. And I think it looks really good, and it's something that I was asked about before this, like kind of in the middle of the summer, as to should we prioritize this, ignore it, you know, because it's not going to be free for us. And I was like, we need to have it because listeners want it. I want it. And for an Apple site, this is like the biggest feature of the year, or one of the biggest features for iOS. So it's here, and it came out the day before the event. Some people noticed it as for the first time during the event, and I'm really happy with dark mode.
Yeah, it's really nice. There are a few rough edges that we're working on, but in general, it is pretty slick for people that live in dark mode in on either Mac or on iOS, obviously.
Yeah, even Android 10. So Android 10 supports dark mode at automatic detection. So if you're on Android 10, you can enjoy it as well. And then you develop the 9to5 Mac app. So that'll be supported once you can submit iOS 13 apps and release them, right?
Yeah, which is some, you can actually start submitting them now. So this should be, assuming it gets approved and stuff on time, should be out with iOS 13. Because right now you have a dark mode in the app anyway, but the web view has to, you have to update the app basically for the web view to reflect the system dark mode.
Yeah, that's just like
it'll be there.
Yeah, that's just like with Twitter. So Twitter has its own dark mode, but then when you click a link, it takes you within, I guess it's still Safari view controller, but it can't be dark mode because it's not made for iOS 13 yet, but soon. That's one thing I'm really excited about. I mean, we'll discuss the event in just a moment, but like all the apps that haven't been dark mode yet, like Instagram, for example, I assume those will catch up pretty soon because they do dark mode on Android already. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you just, even for the ones that do have dark mode, like tying it to the system setting is what I want. Because I'm still running like light mode in the day, and then it switches to dark mode at sunset. And I actually quite like it. So I've been keeping with it. I thought I'd just be like using that for testing and then go back to one or the other, but I've been sticking with it. But obviously, all of the third party apps only have their internal settings. Yeah. So to be able to get it all in, on the same thing is what I want, and that will be coming starting September 19th. So
yeah. And the final thing I'll say before we get into the event is that my 13-foot long USB-C cable, which is black with no branding on it, it arrived and it's perfect. It's so nice to have a really long power cable, just like if you had the extender with the Mac chargers before, but it's black and it's not white, and it's a tiny brick from RavPower with the GaN technology, so that's compact. And then it's not just a long cable, it's also kind of, it's thick but not too thick, so it feels like it's made for, you know, using over time. So I have to imagine it's kind of like what Apple would use on stage at an event whenever they get their connectors going, you know, for the demos.
Yeah, just really, really long cable.
Yeah, so handy. Yeah, highly endorse the mono price 13-foot long USB-C cable in black. It's really good. All right, Mayo, let's walk through the event in order of occurrence. I'll let you lead us off, and we'll give our commentary throughout.
Indeed. So, September 2019 event, they kick off with like an animated intro video that basically just had iconographic representations of all of their big products, with features from like Siri, and you had the click wheel, and then touchscreen, all the way through to the present day. It was a pretty fun video. I don't think it was good as some of the other ones they've done. It's just a bit bland, but it was fine. It's just a nice little intro. And then Cook comes out. He says, "We've got a huge morning for you. We got so much stuff. We're going to dispense with the usual updates." So everyone's getting amped up.
Yep.
Here we go. We're going to be 2 hours on the dot, 2 hour show. Because why else would you dispense it?
Maybe a little bit over, yeah.
Yeah, maybe a little bit over. And obviously, recently, they've always been deferring the updates more than not.
For like the last few years.
Packed events. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they always have packed events now. Like WWDC was over 2 hours, like the last WWDC. So him dispensing the usual updates is pretty regular occurrence nowadays, but they markedly said it. They said they were going to do it. So everyone's getting excited. And of course, we will come back to that at the end. So the first product announcement was the Apple Arcade update. So Antai came out, who obviously is who's like App Store lead. And then she presented Apple Arcade back in March. And she was the person that we saw with the Series 3 ceramic watch.
Yeah, right? In March when the Series 4 was out.
And was she wearing the ceramic at the start of the arcade?
Yeah.
Was she wearing ceramic?
Mm-hmm. This time, you mean?
Yeah, this time.
No. From the start, she was wearing gold Series 4 at least. Or gold something, but I think Series 4. Yeah.
Okay, so she was on Series 4 train.
Right? Yeah.
Because obviously we have a ceramic watch coming up.
Yes.
Yeah, so Antai comes out. They say that they got so many games at launch. It's going to be more new games on a gaming service than any other gaming service in the past, which was a weird phrase to me because I'm pretty sure there have been other gaming services that have launched with more than 100 games. I think their wriggle here is the word new because a lot of these games are launching. Not necessarily. They're, because Apple Arcade is exclusive to mobile platforms. It has to be on arcade only. So mobile platform basically means Android. But
sure.
All of these games can happily be on a console, even including the Nintendo Switch, which is technically a mobile device. But the rules for the arcade is it's exclusive to the App Store on mobile, and you cannot sell it through the App Store normally. It has to be only through the arcade subscription.
Mm-hmm.
But even those being the case, a lot of the games Apple has got on board for this launch are games that are launching first on arcade, or at least simultaneously with like a PC or whatever. So I think that's how they're getting out of that, is that they've got the most number of games that are brand new. And then of course we have the game demos. They showed a Frogger game from Konami, a kind of like sub, not like a diver kind of thing, like platformer from Capcom, and then a game called Sayonara Wild Hearts, which was so optimized for the iPad that they were demoing it on, it didn't actually add black bars top and bottom, which I thought was a bit cheap for the keynote demo, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And that game is one of the games that is not arcade, has clearly not been funded initially by arcade, because that one was announced for Nintendo Switch last year, and of course Nintendo Switch is 16:9, and so here we have the game basically ported in 16:9 to the iPad screen.
And I think other consoles too, right? Like it'll launch on the same day as other consoles.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But so, all the games are not 16:9. It's just that this one in particular happens to be, which is not optimized yet. Maybe it will be. If you're on a TV, it will be. but not for iPad, at least.
Yeah, you could have thought Apple might have been a bit more selective there. Like, guys, if we're going to give you keynote presents, please make it fill the screen. But there you go. I think in general, the three games they chose to essentially launch the service, right? Because for most people, this is the first time they're seeing it.
Yeah.
I don't think they were great picks.
Hmm.
There are better games coming to arcade that they did not show here. Like, I think they showed too many simple games in this demonstration. Now, arcade is family orientated, right? It's clearly not for hardcore gamers, because you're not going to get AAA titles in there. They're indie and upcoming things. But the depth and richness to the games goes beyond simple puzzle games and like 2D platformers, which is essentially what we saw there. Like the third game, the Sayonara game, is like a really, really good version of Temple Run. It's like an Endless Runner essentially, with bits in between. The submarine game, or where they have the guy going underwater.
Yeah, under the depths. Yeah.
Essentially a 2D platformer with 3D graphics. It's fine or whatever. And then the Frogger game is probably one of the best and like richest graphical experiences for a kid's game of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's basically a kid's game.
Well, Frogger for me is like the most relatable out of all these, because as a not really a gamer, like I played Super Nintendo when I was a kid and I played PlayStation 1 as a kid. But beyond that, I didn't make it very far into gaming. And so Frogger is the game that I played heavily on PlayStation 1, which is probably like a retro version. And so Frogger in Toy Town, I saw some people kind of cringe about like the presentation of this, but it's a game. I mean, come on, lighten up. And like when they showed like the little
and what they demoed is better than 99% of the games you get on the App Store.
Totally,
and that's the whole point of arcade in the first place.
Yeah, I think this service will be excellent. And what they showed, like, I can get into Frogger for nostalgic purposes. They showed this like giant baby crawling around, like Frogger having to avoid that baby. And as a dad with a baby who looks like that, I'm just like, oh, you know, like it spoke to me. And the only thing that I think I mentioned this before, but like race car kind of games like Gran Turismo, those I adapt to easily. And arcade has those, but we've not yet seen them demoed, right?
Well, you've got Sonic Racing.
Oh, say that.
It's kind of like a Mario Kart equivalent. But
yeah, the cartoony ones, they don't speak to me as much as like the like real world racer kind of thing. So maybe
like real racing is like the one Apple's go to for like the realistic.
Yeah, I mean that's been one of my favorite games at all on Apple TV because it's rich and it's
and I don't think we've seen a direct equivalent or the same for arcade yet, like a realistic racing game.
But maybe it'll be added in one of these new games added every month section, but. But what we saw there, I did like, and like we discussed recently, that I think for this service, it'll be such a breath of fresh air as a parent to have, 100 plus games that the kids can access on their devices on the Apple TV in the living room, that have no ads that you tap and they force you to Safari, or you have to really hunt down the X button to close the ad, and no ad purchases to manage like, oh, here's a really fun free game, here's two levels, and you want to advance in the game, you've got to pay up. And I see that all the time on just the games that my kids come across, and a lot of them, like, I'll have a talk with them and say like, this is what this means, this is a really scammy app, you've got to pay $40 a month, and I'll make an equation. I'll relate that to what that looks like, and kind of describe this isn't really a good game. Arcade will have none of that. It'll all be ad free, and there's no cost aside from the subscription, which is reasonably priced.
Yeah, and beyond just like here's two levels, it also won't have any of the rubbish, which is like energy boosting, basically like casino style. Pay to win, or you're frozen out for 3 hours, you have to pay for 20 gems or just wait. Like, kids don't understand that. They just want to play the game, and that's what it's preying on, right? That's why this business model exists, essentially. So arcade is a great safe haven from all that, and I think it will have good games. The reason I think that the demos were a bit of a disservice is they didn't have like a 3D experience type thing with like a third person shooter or moving about with the environment, which they have demoed in, there's like video trails, especially like the one in March. They had a couple of those. Just to make expectations more than, oh, these are all like 2D games. Mm-hmm. I feel like the Frogger was a good one because it has obviously the brand equity. The Sayonara Wild Hearts was one of the, like, showing the artistic direction of like indie games, right? That kind of thing. I thought that was cool. I don't think the underwater platformer game was a great choice for this event. They should have had like Ocean Horn 2, which is kind of like Legend of Zelda-ish, right?
So it's like open world.
Open world style, exactly, yeah.
Get lost in it kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that interests me about arcade that I didn't totally appreciate from the first announcement is that even though they are doing funding for indie games that wouldn't be successful otherwise, like maybe they couldn't even be developed otherwise, having Capcom, having Frogger, Konami involved, like they've got, having Sega involved, they've got real game makers too. Not to say that indie game makers aren't real game makers, but it's like you've got titles that you already know and expect from other platforms. Like, these are new versions of those games made for
like iOS. The franchises come across, maybe not the exact same game, but the game using the characters.
Yeah, and you've even seen like Sega have trouble maintaining their catalog on iOS. Like, it's like a one-off release, and then who knows if it'll even be updated for the next device, And with arcade, you won't have that problem, presumably.
Yeah, and even something like Super Mario Run, which was like Nintendo's first stab at doing a game for the iPhone, that game kind of flopped financially because that game was like, they were trying to be ethical. So you've got some free levels, but then to unlock the whole game, you only need to pay like $9 once. Well, nobody did it, unsurprisingly, so it didn't really make very much money. But that is like a perfect example which could slot into arcade if it wasn't already out. And presumably make a lot more money for the franchise. So it definitely appeals to top labels, not just indies, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of the top names, Disney, Lego, Sega, Capcom, even if they're not like making the games for arcades themselves, they've licensed with a publisher or a developer who are actually making the games using, you know, the intellectual property of them. So you'll definitely have like familiar faces there.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of familiar faces, I just want to say that Ann Tyler, so this is only the second time we've seen her present, right? Like, it's been Arcade in March and Arcade this time?
I believe she did the App Store redesign.
Okay, so maybe the third time. She's a good presenter, yeah. Though. I think mm-hmm. everyone, or most everyone at this keynote, whether it was their first time or their third time or whatever, it was overall a good, you know, you had a good shuffle of new people that we haven't seen before or haven't seen very often. But starting with Anti, you know, after Tim Cook, of course, like, good presentation without having the same three people up there every year.
Yeah, I like Anti. She's good.
Mm-hmm.
So we obviously had seen our own reporting from Guillermo Rambo uh-huh. that the leak price was going to be $4.99 a month.
Yeah, you're in disbelief.
I said on this show that I found that incredibly cheap and didn't expect it to happen. I was kind of expecting like $7.99.
Okay.
But I was wrong. It is indeed $4.99 a month for the whole family.
Mm-hmm. Just compelling. Like, it's really, really good pricing.
Yeah, I think this is very, very good. And you get a 1 month free trial. And my like hesitation, my primary reason for saying it was not going to be that cheap is because then it would get compared to TV Plus, which was going to be more expensive than it, right? That was my logic. But we'll get on to
well,
they've actually addressed that situation.
Well, but your other point was compared to News Plus, which is $10 a month, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah. it's still maybe better than that, you know, but yeah, the thing there is... I think you explained this too at the time, was it's compared to Apple kind of funds this or licenses this, and with News Plus there's less to work with, where it was Arcade, even though you're doing a developer share, there's more room to work with.
Yeah. Yeah, like News Plus, it's widely understood that Apple gets 50% and the other 50% gets shared amongst the publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And as it stands today at $9.99, News Plus looks even less compelling than it ever did, right? Because it will immediately be compared against their new services today. So if they wanted to shake it up a little bit, they could just take away their 50% share of News Plus and just give the same amount of money to the news business and then all the newspapers and the magazines and just sell it as a $4.99 subscription. Like,
yeah,
I don't think it's out of the question.
Literally,
as we'll get on to, they are not shy about doing loss-leading operations this time around. So they could put News Plus and basically just run it at zero profit for a while.
Because these services are not their primary business. They are businesses that they want to build out over time and make serious revenue from. But they're not... I mean, they're still the iPhone company, not the game subscription company that also sells console titles and things like that. Like, this is all kind of experimental, building it from the ground up. And they acknowledge that they need to spend money to make this profitable.
Yeah, down the road, 100%, these want to be proper businesses,
yes,
that are making money, and they're not just making these things to make you buy another iPhone every year.
Right.
They want to make revenue on top of that.
They want your iPhone that lasts for 5 years to continue making money for Apple.
Yeah, but this pricing is like probably the best example of them actually embracing the kind of like services mantra, and that this is affordable. This is clearly meant to get mass market appeal and adoption. And it's going to mean they're not going to make very much money for it initially, and maybe not for a while, and maybe even lose money on it for a bit. But down the road, they want to build the user base and go for it. Mm-hmm. And so Arcade will be $4.99 for up to 6 people on family sharing. And it's coming out basically with the new operating systems. So that's starting on September 19th, because iOS 13 comes out on September 19th. And then iPadOS follows like 2 weeks later or whatever.
Yep. So October 19th will be the first time that anybody's even billed for this, which is kind of cool. Like, mm-hmm. you get to dive in, play all 100 plus games from start to finish if you want to in the first month. But really, you get a good chance for everyone in the family to try it out on their devices before you decide if you want to keep paying for this. And because it's $60 a year, the cost of one console title, then it's a really good value. Like I wonder what the Sayonara Wild Hearts game, what will that cost on Switch compared to a year subscription of Arcade? I mean, there's a difference in like subscribing for a year versus owning forever, but I imagine like that'll be $40 or $60 for Switch.
Yeah, some of the indie games on Switch are a bit cheaper, like 20 to 30, but mm-hmm. still, like, it's going to be like roughly a third to a half of the year subscription.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And this is the whole point. Like, you're not getting AAA titles here, but you're hopefully getting very good games and
AA titles.
The very good AAA. That's what they call like Call of Duty or
right
that type of stuff, right? Yeah. So they're not AAA, but hopefully they're very good. And even if they're just the mobile genre, the point is $4.99 a month. And yes, you don't own the games, but you've got like 100 of them with more coming every month. So hopefully that's enough to offset the difference. It's basically like buying in the first year of the App Store when in-app purchases weren't a thing, and all the games were like $10 each, $5 each, right? Like the glory days of the App Store, which is no in-app purchase rubbish. That's basically what we're getting, but you're only buying one a month, right? Mm-hmm. So if you can get one fun game a month out of this service, then it's basically worth it for you. Plus, that game is available to your entire family mm-hmm. across Mac, iPad, TV, iPhone. Like, I think it's compelling. Like, if you buy Sayonara Wild Hearts on Switch, you can only play it on the Switch. You can't put it on your TV. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, the Switch has a TV component. That's not the best example.
But even that is one user. And if you do like a mm-hmm. digital purchase, it's tied to that one user on the Nintendo Switch. Whereas if you have like two users for the Switch, I don't think you can do a second game save for that second user, even if they have an account. It's whoever bought it. I've run into that with my kids and my Switch. And they just have to use my account for games I bought digitally. Whereas with Arcade, you'll have the account through family sharing. That's where the game save will be. And aren't the games in Arcade, the progress is saved between devices too? So if you started on one device, it's not just on that device, it's everywhere.
Yeah, they like have Game Center and iCloud integration mm-hmm. for cloud saves and everything yeah. like that.
Cool,
yeah.
cool.
So I'll be looking forward to that. That's September 19th. We can obviously start playing some of this stuff for ourselves.
Yeah, and we've said it before, but isn't Arcade just a great name for this? Like, they nailed mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. This service, I'd say good chance of success.
Yeah, they didn't call it Game Center Plus or Game Center or App Store Game
Plus.
They
should probably rename Game Center to, like, Arcade Profile or something.
Right.
It's basically yeah. just ditch it for everything else and just brand it under the Arcade umbrella.
Yes.
Yep. Thanks to our friends at Smile Software for sponsoring Happy Hour. Text Expander is an incredible Mac productivity tool to have in your arsenal. You can turn the things you type into reusable snippets and access them time and time again. Is there someone's name you have to write down regularly but can never remember how to spell it? Set up an acronym as a text shortcut in Text Expander and never make the same mistake again. Text Expander goes beyond simple find and replace. With variables and forms, snippets are much more powerful. You can quickly stamp out an invoice with easily editable fields to edit only the bits that need to be customized for each individual. Text Expander is applicable to so many situations. Email addresses, signatures, chunks of code, form letters, even images. Anywhere that you need consistent and accurate text. If you've ever written something twice, there's a good chance you could work smarter and use a Text Expander snippet instead. For example, if you're a developer who has to do live presentations, you can use Text Expander to store chunks of code. Avoid embarrassing mistakes by letting Text Expander insert the code snippets into your IDE as you concentrate on the core message of your presentation. On the basic plan, Text Expander snippets sync across all your devices, keeping you productive at home or on the road. Text Expander is available for Mac, iPhone, iPad, Windows, and even Chrome. Text Expander for Teams adds a whole extra layer for coordinating work with others. Snippets can be shared automatically across the organization, and you can even see stats about which snippets are being used more than others, so you can focus on tuning up any areas that are being ignored. Companies use Text Expander for Teams for customer support, reporting, and much, much more. Listeners to this show can get 20% off their first year subscription. Visit textexpander.com/podcast to learn more and sign up. That's textexpander.com/podcast. So now we've done the first service, then the second service, which, as good as Arcade is, all the attention is obviously on their TV subscription service.
It's the more like mainstream broad appeal service
by a mile
that you would think, even if Arcade cost $5, then you could potentially charge like near Netflix prices for a Netflix like service, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even if like Apple TV Plus was like free, I still reckon it, or Apple TV Plus was like $50, it would still be, I still think it's going to be more of an appeal than Arcade, just because more people like TV than like games. Like,
sure,
it's just true. TV's mass appeal. Games is a smaller
fraction. Games requires input, and TV does not. Like, you just sit back and watch. Mm-hmm. And that's one reason that I am not a great gamer, because it's not just to sit back and watch a movie experience. It does require, you know, input. And
so, I'd say people are more interested in games than they are magazines.
Uh-huh.
Everyone's more interested in TV than games.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's like the ranking. So, interestingly, they did not get out like Jamie Amberg and Zach Van Aerlicht for this segment of the presentation, even though they did have Anti do the App Store. Tim Cook presented the Apple TV Plus segment entirely on his own, which I think, you know, is symbolic of this is the future of the company in a way, right? Like, they want him to be like spearheading it in the same way that he always talks about the iPad.
I mean, the March event was like, if you had to call it one thing, it was the TV Plus event, right? Like that just like this is the iPhone event with a bunch of other stuff. March was like the TV Plus event, even though News Plus launched with it and Arcade was shown with it. TV Plus was the big focus of that, like maybe half of the duration of it. And all the stars in the audience was probably especially tuned to like Hollywood types.
Definitely, yeah. So they didn't have any celebrity seemingly in the audience, or definitely not on stage. So they didn't roll that out again. So it wasn't just a repeat, which was nice.
Oprah wasn't there. Yeah.
Yeah, Oprah wasn't there.
At least on stage.
Cook kind of introduced it by saying that the trailers that they had released to date have had an incredible response. He even said like the morning show trailer, the number of views on that video is like rivaling the biggest TV shows of all time.
What an Apple like thing to say too, like
yeah, one of the most watched trailers for any TV show ever.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say combined the trailers have been watched over 100 million times. Yes. So obviously they want to show people they're actually interested in their content.
Yeah.
And to build on top of that, we saw a trailer for C, which is the kind of sci-fi thriller drama
world building
Jason Momoa.
Yeah,
world building. Yeah, probably at the moment the closest equivalent to, like, because everyone's like, you know, Apple wants to be like Game of Thrones, right? Mm-hmm. This is the closest you're getting at the moment, because it is like, you know, a whole mythic world with lore and stuff, right? And obviously the whole conceit is that the human race can't see, but then what we find in this trailer is that the children can see, so it's like defend the children, and that's what this whole thing kind of builds up around.
Yeah, which is that a new detail? Like, that this isn't just that some people can see all of a sudden, but it's the children, and then there's this whole, you know, game angle to it.
Yeah, like, we didn't really know anything beyond the human race has been blind forever.
Yeah.
That was essentially where what we had up to now. So the sea trailer did actually give us some plot detail. Not enough, really, to say whether the show's going to be compelling or not long term. Obviously, it's a trailer. Yeah. And it all looks gorgeous. It looks... Clearly, they put enough money into the visuals, right?
I don't think it'll be...
This is one of the most expensive shows ever made. So, and it definitely lives up to the visual side of that.
Yeah, I don't know, but I don't think it'll be as brutal and violent and as explicit as Game of Thrones was known to be.
It's not going to have, like, beheadings or the sex.
But if you liked other stuff from Game of Thrones, maybe this will appeal, you know? And I've never seen an episode of Game of Thrones myself. I don't know about you, but... The trailer, at least, like one thing I don't like about like watching TV, I don't want to feel stressed. I like romantic comedies and things like that. So there is something to that about, you know, at least at launch, Apple's stuff being you probably won't be stressed by it, even if it doesn't have the appeal that the shows have.
And even Game of Thrones, it kind of they pulled back on the shock factor of like mass killing and.
Mm.
You know, just crazy stuff to be like, oh, you know, we're doing crust stuff that no TV shows have ever done before.
Yeah.
And, you know, people still stayed around because the story was good and obviously it looked good and stuff. So,
right.
And I look at the C trailer, I'm like, yeah, I'm into this, right? Obviously, there's a difference between a 2-minute trailer and a 10-episode season.
Yeah.
So whether the plot can actually sustain itself over whole 10 episodes is going to be a question mark, especially as the premise of this show is most of the people can't see, and some it might be hard to translate that to screen. But, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I'm into it.
Yeah, I will say something again about the family-oriented appeal of Apple TV Plus for now, at least. Like, I do think over time that will kind of need to change, and you know. But for now, over the weekend, I was flying from Dallas to New Orleans, and I had my iPad Pro on the plane, and I was watching. I downloaded a TV show just to watch on the plane that had come out that day, and it's only an hour and a half flight, so perfect for like a TV show and some entertainment. But at the beginning of this show, they had the warning, like, this will contain sexual content. And no episode prior had. So I was thinking, oh, man, I hope it isn't awkward, like, in the middle of the show. And it happened to be at the very end of that episode. And I just had to, like, put the iPad down. Because not because it bothered me, but I just didn't want to be on a plane, like, watching something that looked like that, you know. So, again, there'll be some appeal to, like, what's on TV Plus. You'll kind of know what you can expect in terms of the content level. You can watch it in front of your kids. There's definitely some appeals to that versus what is on everything
and,
else.
And of the launch lineup, there's like five of the shows are mature audience rated. One of the shows is R rated. And then there's like the same number as like PG and below, essentially. Mm. So there's a decent mix, at least on the rating schedule, of if you just want to look at ratings, is what counts as family friendly and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
They said, obviously, there's new Apple Originals every single month. But the big news was the distribution and the pricing.
Yeah.
November 1st, which is basically in line with the rumors, right? November timeframe.
So it's a few days before Disney Plus launches, like by 2 days, maybe?
Yeah.
But it's there.
But it is $4.99
yeah.
a month.
Which the rumor there, by way of Bloomberg, was that Apple was considering a $10 price, so $9.99 a month, or free. And I think a lot of people were guessing similar to that, and worrying that Disney Plus would have, which is $6.99 a month, is that right?
Yep.
Would just undercut it to pieces, even though you can probably afford to have both. If you can afford one, you can probably afford both. And they both would undercut Netflix, which can be as high as, like, I think about $18 a month for multi-screens and 4K. This is Dolby Atmos, 4K with, you know, it's the good quality stuff in terms of visually and audio. And just $5 a month, like, going forward. There's no, like, this is a limited time thing. They can obviously raise the price over time as their catalog grows, as they become to look more like what Netflix is, minus all the licensed content. But yeah, $5 a month, less than Disney Plus, same as Arcade. You know, you put those two things together, that's $10. But it's a very compelling price. Like, I, even with only five shows and you know, at launch or so, then you say one looks pretty good. $5 a month, I think the way they described it is like a movie rental, or, you know, something about like that, you know.
Yeah, or like two TV show rentals. Mm-hmm. If you go to the iTunes store, a TV show is like $2 each.
Yeah, a movie rental is almost as much as a movie is. Like, I always just buy the movie in case it turns out to be good, because if I rent it, then you can't, like, pay the difference to own it. And I think a movie rental is more like over 10, 15. So it's a value.
They are 100% coming out the gate as like a loss leader on this, mm-hmm. because at $4.99, it is unsustainable for them for this to be $4.99 forever, even with the current like 12 show lineup, because we've heard obviously all the rumors that they committed about $6 billion for shows over the next 3 years. The morning show alone is like a $300 million endeavor, and, you know, with some quick maths, you need like 50 million paying subscribers over that 3 years to even break even on what they've committed already to date, right? And obviously you have to keep subscribers on board. And you need more subscribers if you actually want to make any money, and you obviously need to be investing in new content. If you compare the 50 million number for a brand new service, Apple TV Plus, to Apple Music, which I think everyone would agree is the most compelling service available, because, you know, it's streaming music, the full music library in the world, and that's $9.99 a month, and they currently tout 60 million paying subscribers of that. So, and that's taken them 5 years. So getting to 50 million for Apple TV Plus within 3 years, it's basically not going to happen. So they are 100% taking losses out of the gate of this, but I think this is what they need to do to actually get a foothold, for people not to laugh it down immediately, because I'm pretty bullish on TV Plus. I don't subscribe to the idea that you need to have like a whoever has the most number of shows wins, because then nothing would have competed with anything. Like, that's not how it works. Sure. You need, you know, 5 to 10 high quality shows, which then means that 3 or so of them you're actually interested in, so that you keep paying and then you stay on board. And they're definitely off to the right foot here at $4.99. That, like, let's say Disney Plus obviously has a much larger content catalog, but a lot of the content catalog will have been stuff that people have seen before,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, mm-hmm. a lot of it's just back catalog, like filler, right? I'm certainly not dissing Disney Plus. I think it's great, but there's definitely a premium appeal to a service where you know everything you're seeing is brand new, like, and clearly at an epic scale, because you might already own all the Disney Plus stuff that you're interested in on iTunes or whatever, or even if you pay for it, you've seen it all before. Obviously, they're working on originals as well, but I think Apple TV Plus can stand on its own as a subscription. I was obviously thinking it was going to be $9.99 with like a 1-year free trial, and what they have is $4.99 with a 7-day free trial. That's if you're just coming to it plain Jane, right? You just want to buy it. It's $4.99. You get 7 days. So arcades a month, but TV Plus, you only get 7. But of course, the extra layer on top of this is their kind of quasi hardware bundle, where you get a free year of TV Plus with a purchase of any new device, basically any phone, iPad, iPod Touch, Mac, or Apple TV. You just get a year. So they're going to have hundreds of millions of people that have a full year of TV Plus for free very, very soon.
Yeah, it's basically anywhere where the TV app is, then you'll get a free year. And the way that the fine print is on that, it describes it as a limited time offer. So you can see that being, you know, after 1 year of having users, maybe 2 years, maybe a year and a half, they say, that's done now. We're its own business. And then the next step is to raise the price eventually. Kind of maybe like following Disney Plus's footsteps, you know, because Disney Plus, I don't think anyone believes that'll be $7 forever either, you know, just like Hulu and Netflix.
Yeah, just look at Netflix. That mm-hmm. was originally $9.99. Now it's basically $14.99 if you want high-def streaming and multiple mm-hmm. screens. Like, everything, all of this point of these services, they start cheap and then the price slowly creeps up once they've got a foothold of content in elasticity, basically. Once you're sucked in, the price starts going up. So no one believes that Disney Plus is going to be $7 forever. I think nobody believes that Apple TV Plus will be $5 forever.
And the free year,
there's a year up front. The year, because I was always talking like $9.99 with like a really long free trial.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've basically given you the same thing, because if you don't buy any new hardware, it's really cheap, or cheaper, right? It's five, mm-hmm. it's $5. And if you do buy hardware, you basically got a year for them, which gives them time to build out their catalog of shows, because just like Arcade, they'll be adding new films and TV shows every single month. So this, if let's say they add 2 per month, right, just to be conservative, then in a year's time they will have like 50 total shows in their roster. So it just gives them breathing time to start accumulating subscribers and members whilst their content library is built out.
Yeah, I want to read the fine print on the, it's from the Apple Newsroom for the TV Plus announcement this go around, because I think it's pretty informative and it probably answers a lot of questions, because there's been some confusion, like, if I already have a bunch of devices, then do I get TV Plus for free for like 50 years kind of thing. so it's long, but I'm going to read it verbatim and then we'll, you know, see what the takeaways are there. But here it goes. Customers who purchase any new iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, Mac, or iPod Touch starting September 10th, so that was yesterday as we record, can enjoy 1 year of Apple TV Plus for free. So if you bought a new Apple Watch, doesn't count, but you've got to buy any new iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, Mac, or iPod Touch from yesterday and on to get TV Plus for free for 1 year. Beginning November 1st, customers can initiate the 1 year free offer in the Apple TV app on the device running the latest software update. Customers have 3 months after device activation to claim the offer. Or if the device is purchased and activated before the launch of TV Plus, they have 3 months starting November 1st. So that's pretty clear. The subscription will automatically renew at $4.99 per month after 1 year. Funny. Customers can cancel at any time in settings at least 1 day before each renewal date. Customers who cancel during the offer period will forfeit the remainder of their offer. This limited time offer applies to both new and refurbished products, models, which is nice, including devices from the iPhone upgrade program. Is not restricted to any specific sales channel, e.g. Apple Store or resellers. That's nice. And will be available in all countries where Apple TV Plus will launch. Up to 6 family members can share any one Apple TV Plus subscription and watch using their own Apple ID and password. Only one 1-year offer is available per family, regardless of the number of devices purchased. So that's pretty clarifying. You can't stack them. This limited time offer applies to new and refurbished. So that means limited time offer could go away after a year. You know, it's not permanently part of the service. And then the question is about, like, when have you bought something, you know, the 10S last year, does that count? Or a Mac in the summer? No, those don't count. It's got to be from September 1st. And then it also expires from 3 months after you bought the device, or from November 1st when the device launches, whichever is sooner, I suppose. So, or you know, relevant. So, yeah, it's it's a really good offer. It's a good,
yeah, and it's not, and it's, I think some people thought it was like, oh, you get it free for yourself, but no, it will unlock it for the family.
Right.
So yep. You need to buy one thing. You can buy a $150 Apple TV, and then you essentially get 5 times 12 $60 of free TV shows for a year.
You could buy the refurbished Apple TV for a little bit less, or it can be any sales channel. So if you find like a sale at like Best Buy, that counts too.
Yeah, it's a good offer. Mm-hmm. And it leaves, and obviously in a year's time, Apple will be licking their lips as everyone that was getting it for free forgets to unsubscribe, and then they start collecting $5 a month from it, either unknowingly or willingly if people are on board with the service, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if it comes to a year in the future and Apple believes that their service is not compelling enough yet to stand on its own, they can just launch the offer again and just go again for another year.
Yeah, buy a new device, get another year.
Yeah, it just gives them a buffer period, right? In the long, long term, they are not going to be pairing Apple TV Plus with hardware sales. That's just obvious. Mm-hmm. But they can just keep doing it until it gets to a point where the service can stand on its own. It's like a perfect strategy.
And they've not done this with any other thing before. Like they've given you codes with like Beats headphones, but they're essentially like 1 month more than the 3 month free trial at best. And then everyone got a 3 month free trial, you know, from the start. And one of the key things here is that the family part of it, you've got to be using family sharing, I imagine. Like that's obviously what it is for. Yeah. One account per family, but then also for the trial. Like if you just happen to live in the same house, you need to have family sharing for everyone to benefit from that. Otherwise, it's just your account. So, yeah, it's very compelling. I mean, $5 a month anyway, and then no one will pay for the first week, but a lot of people won't pay for the first year even. And then you can become sort of ambassadors for TV Plus. If you enjoy it, you can recommend shows and everything. And then you know, even say you get it free if you buy a new thing. And it's a pretty good pitch. I like it.
Yeah. And we're not going to break down like the merits of every single show on this episode. We've got 2 months now to talk about all that stuff. But I do just want to highlight that Amazing Stories, which is the Steven Spielberg anthology series, which was the first thing Apple showed at the March event, right? He was the first person out on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
He's not mentioned for the launch period. And in fact, it's not mentioned on the press release at all. Like, they talk about 15 shows in total, about 6 of which are coming at launch, and then loads more in the press release. Steven Spielberg or Amazing Stories is not mentioned at all. So I feel like something a bit wonky's gone around there. Because back in March, the New York Times reported that Amazing Stories was wrapping filming. So it seems like it would be ready-ish, but they've basically gone silent on it.
Maybe they don't want to give it away for free. It'll be part of year. Surely it won't be part of year two if it's been so promoted from March on.
I bet there's an amazing story behind
that. I tell you what, that's the only reason you brought this up, isn't it? I'm happy that Helpsters, the Sesame Street work or the Sesame Workshop show with the girl puppet named Cody who helps people. It's all about like coding and kind of computer science ish. That'll be one of the launch shows because my kids are at an age right now where they're both very into Sesame Street characters and that whole world, and so that'll be a cool one to watch with them. Snoopy in Space, another one that like we can all kind of sit around and enjoy. You know, the kids for like it's a cartoon, and then the family for like nostalgia purposes. So, and then the dramas like they look pretty good to me so far. So we'll see. You know, it won't be a topic every single week, but they did a good presentation at the keynote, and they've done some compelling pricing options here or pricing, you know, bundles or promotions.
Yeah. Now, something they didn't mention at the actual event, but was in the press release, is that they are actually doing Apple TV Plus for the web. So there will be like a TV app you can get to by going to tv.apple.com. So even if you're on like a PC
at work,
and you don't have the TV app or Android tablet, right? Like they can go to a browser. So you'll be able to go to a browser.
Just like Netflix, which has like mobile app, but not desktop apps, you know?
Yep. Yeah, just as a website. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to go to a URL, type it in, and actually watch the TV Plus stuff on the web. So that's a really cool sign. And obviously, before the week before the keynote, they announced the Apple Music beta for the web as well.
Yeah, so it's kind of out of nowhere.
Starting. Yeah, exactly. They're ramping it up.
It's pretty much like iTunes on the web, except now it's music. So it's not, you know, podcasts, the iTunes store and all that on the web. It's just the music app experience. So it's for Apple Music subscribers. But it's good. Like, it's not bad at all. If you're on a pre-Catalina version of macOS and can access this, it's pretty good. And it reacts to dark mode and light mode. So it's cool. I like it.
Yeah, it's a bit buggy, but hopefully...
it's a beta. It has beta in the name.
Yeah, exactly. It's a beta. Mm-hmm. And I find that, like, the web view parts of iTunes are slow as well, and this is just a web view on its own, so...
That's true.
It's probably at least as good as the iTunes experience. And then also, we got some details about how TV Plus TV shows will be released, because obviously we've been going back and forth about, are they going to do week by week? Are they going to do Netflix binging and just drop everything at once? Well... Basically, we're both right because they're going to do all of it. So they say most shows will be, they're going to release 3 episodes for free. So you can watch 3 episodes in one go.
I finally came around last week, by the way, on that.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it on the show. Mm-hmm, actually. Mm-hmm. Yep. So they say most will be 3 episodes for free. And then every episode after that is week by week. But then some shows will be released seasons at a time all in one go. So I imagine stuff like C and The Morning Show, they're like leaning on blockbusters, are going to be week by week. And then maybe Helpsters, like the kids programming, is all at once. Stuff like that, probably. Is how
yeah,
it's
that makes
out.
Sense.
Yeah.
Are there any questions left about TV Plus that they obviously didn't answer a bunch at March, but with September, is everything answered now? Like the only questions I have is like, you know, with Netflix shows, that originals, you can often... also buy those on iTunes to keep, you know, or on like DVD or Blu-ray to keep. I don't suppose this will happen for TV Plus content. Like the whole point is the service, not just...
Yeah, and it's the whole point is exclusive.
Yeah. But are there any like, you know, obvious questions that just weren't answered in March that are still not answered, or do we have the whole picture now?
I think we're basically ready to go. Like... It's kind of funny, some of the launch shows don't even have trailers yet. It still feels like they're kind of running by the seat of their pants a little bit. Like, they say The Elephant Queen is a documentary that's being available on November 1st, but if you go in the TV app right now, you can't even see a trailer for it. So there's some stuff where they're, like, rushing to get it finished, I think. But the service as a whole, we know the price, we know when it's going to be available, we know what device it's going to be on. They didn't announce any further, like, TV app expansion, so obviously it's on the Samsung TVs, and they said... it's coming in the future to things like Roku, Amazon Fire, Vizio, LG, you know, all of that stuff. But they didn't actually give a date for any of that.
I think they need
to in the future.
Yeah, they need to target getting that also on the consoles, because if you can do PlayStation and Xbox and even Switch, then that goes to a lot of TVs. Like, even if there's like a kid in the house or just one gamer, then everyone can benefit from that. Even if it's an old TV that'll never get the TV app, isn't a smart TV. You know, consoles are I don't know if they're underrated or not, but you don't often think of those as like an Apple TV equivalent in terms of like making a dumb TV smart, but they definitely are. You know, I know a lot of people who watch video on dumb TVs over their console because it's basically a set-top box in that regard.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's TV Plus, November 1st. Pretty excited to watch some stuff. Obviously, it all depends on how good the content is, but... based on the trailers, I'd say they got a decent shot at it. So at least even if it's bad, we've got a whole year to watch to watch stuff before we have to like start considering what we're actually going to do.
Yeah, one thing I will say is that, you know, like you said, with the Amazing Story Steven Spielberg anthology series, Amazing Stories, that's we don't know when that will come. They've shown a whole lot of stuff in terms of the shows and talent that we don't know when that will launch yet, but they did say every month they'll add new content. So presumably just when it's ready, and they'll do some planning around marketing and everything. But the Oprah stuff, that was a big part of the March event and the marketing, and that isn't part of the launch yet. And we assume that's going to be at least like Oprah produced documentary type stuff. And they've named two things so far, but no release date on those yet. And then they kind of hinted also, right, at like a book club sort of thing. And
yeah, the Apple TV Plus press release says Oprah Winfrey will join the world's most compelling authors in a book club and also share ways, meaningful ways to create positive change. And that's referring to like the toxic labor documentary stuff, like the one and the mental health one. That's what they announced in March, which they later are told there's a partnership with Prince Harry from the Queen and stuff. So
that
but they didn't give dates for any of that. That's
just and there's no new info in that regard. The other thing is that we do know based on the reports that led up to this over like the last 2-3 years, it's been a long time before we got to this point, but that they've done acquisitions of international shows and they've hired people to create content in international markets. Apple TV Plus will launch in, I think the number was over 100 countries, but it's all, I suppose, going to be English at launch. Maybe the subtitles will be localized, but that's what it is. It's multi-country, but it's English only. Maybe they'll do dubs. I don't know. They haven't said that yet. But I believe in the future, though, we will see European content that you can probably find in you know, any version of it. But it's highlighted in you know, European countries. And the same thing, you know, other parts of the world. But we don't have anything on that yet. It's just based on, you know, hiring and reports and what they've purchased so far.
Yep, they're ramping it up. It's easy to think that cybercrime is something mysterious that happens to other people. It's easy to feel like no one wants your data, but you'd be mistaken. Your privacy is always under attack. When the internet connection is unencrypted, your data is being transferred over the air and in the open. You can't see it with your eyes, but unencrypted network traffic can easily be read by unscrupulous actors as if it was written on a poster on the wall. Take back your privacy with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address so no one can see what you're doing. To enable ExpressVPN, it just takes one click. Download the app, click to connect, and boom, you're protected. ExpressVPN uses cutting-edge technology called Trusted Server to make sure that no one can keep logs of what you're doing online. It has easy-to-use apps that run seamlessly in the background of your computer, phone, and tablet. You can get up and running for less than $7 a month, and your purchase comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. One subscription applies to every device you own, from Macs to iPhones to iPads, even Android phones, home routers, and other devices too. Use ExpressVPN to surf public Wi-Fi without fear of being snooped on and keep your personal data private. ExpressVPN also creates an internet without borders, defeating content restrictions for online media, music services, and more by masking your real IP address wherever you are in the world. ExpressVPN has 24/7 human support to help you get up and running. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/happyhour. That's expressvpn.com/happyhour for 3 months free with a 1-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/happyhour to learn more.
For the iPad section, Greg Joswiak came out, who's known just as Jaws on stage. Give us a rundown, but I think we can knock this one out in just a few minutes.
This does not need a lot of discussion.
No,
they as CoinEx, and there are a few other rumors about it. The 9.7-inch iPad is replaced by the 10.2-inch iPad. It has the same processor as the previous gen 9.7-inch iPad. It's still an A10. It's in the same body as this year's iPad Air, so it has like the smart connector for a smart keyboard. The same smart keyboard that the iPad Air uses is now fitting this one. It just has basically the cheap iPad just has slightly bigger bezels because it's 10.2 inches, not 10.5 inches. And that's about it. It's $329, same price, and it ships at the end of the month.
So
I don't think there's much really to say apart from like that there's now quite a lot of overlap between the 10.2 and the 10.5. Because they're the same body even. They offer basically the same features apart from the Air has better screen because it has like True Tone and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and it has an A12 chip versus A10. But you know, a lot of people are just going to carry on buying the most popular iPad, which is the 329 one, and basically what you now get is a bit more screen real estate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the iPad, which
that's literally it.
Which got much more stage time than that at the event, but
yeah, because they kind of enumerated through iPad OS features and yeah. stuff. But
and the next up is the Apple Watch. So this is where I have a lot to say, obviously, and I'll lead into it by saying like our big expectation was that the Apple Watch was going to be a small part of the fall lineup because I think we largely expected the Series 4 to continue. Titanium, which came by way of iHelp BR, and yep. and ceramic returning, which first came from Ming-Chi Kuo. So we had those two new case materials. What we expected was the same processor, the S4 processor from the Apple Watch Series 4. And so that informed our belief that there'd be no new watch this year. And pair that with the fact that there were just no rumors about sleep tracking. There was a late report from Rambo that sleep tracking, like how it would work, but not to say it'll be a part of a new watch. It'll either be for every watch, you know, or you know, look at Bloomberg's report that sleep tracking is next year. But what we did get with the watch, which, you know, you can summarize pretty quickly, and always on display. That's like the one big thing. Plus Compass, plus international calling for emergency services in other countries, if you're, you know, from another country, when traveling. The always on display would have been what would have leaked, but it didn't. And so that's why, you know, based on all the reporting and the fact that we believe there'd be no new chip in the watch, that we said probably going to be new case colors and that, you know, the new materials and that's it. And I'll kind of, I had to think about this for a little while after the event. I do think it's a wholly new Apple Watch. Like, it's definitely worthy of the Series 5 name because always on display, it's one of those features that, you know, you've wanted from day one. And to actually do it, no matter what version of the watch it is, it deserves a new version number. It's definitely a new watch. Compass, it's way more minor. International calling for cellular models for emergency services. That's even more niche because you've got to be a traveler. And we'll talk about more about that in a moment. But I do think it's worthy of the Series 5 name, and they have an S5 chip in it, but the way they describe the S5 chip is, it is, let's see what I've got in my notes, it's twice as fast as the Series 3, but the Series 4 chip, the S4 chip, was two times faster than Series 3, so from what we can gather, it's literally the S4 chip, as we expected, but called Series S5 because it works with the Series 5 watch.
Yeah, it's rebranded.
Yeah.
And that perfectly fits with our code findings that they were going to be the same chip, and even if they didn't have like the display changes and they could do always on display only through software and they just software locked it to new models, they would have called it Series 5 anyway, because always on display is such a big feature that, you know, credit to them, didn't leak at all, but that is such a big thing on its own that they can easily rev the version number and get away with it. But I think once the teardowns come in, they're just going to confirm that this watch is very, 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 very similar to the Series 4 watch from a hardware perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we got to the actual watch presentation, there was a separate demo. So talk about what came before the watch announcement in the watch section.
Yeah. So they had another like cute video where it's kind of like the Dear Tim video from a couple of years ago, where it was all different like customers supposedly writing in to say how the watch had helped change their life, whether it's through fitness or through saving their life if they got into an accident. And they did like another riff on that this time, except it was like through FaceTime, essentially. That was the idea. It was a cute video.
I thought it was very, very well done. And it wasn't just like FaceTime. It kind of built up from like home video, FaceTime interviews to being like the first one that we saw a few years ago was like highly produced, right? But with this one, it seemed like it's like more authentic because it's like homemade videos in a way, but then it did lead up to more produced at the very end. I felt like, and there was even inclusion of someone who was doing sign language, right, over mm-hmm. FaceTime, and it was captioned so that you could follow along if you didn't read sign language. But I mean, the length of it and the detail, there weren't just a few people. There were plenty of people, I think, but the time that they gave each person throughout the build-up, I thought it was really compelling. You know, it was even though it's the second version of one of these videos, I thought it was new, it different enough that it definitely stood on its own, and naturally I loved it. You know,
yeah, I'd agree with that. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then they got out Sumbo Desai, which is Apple's VP of Health, to talk about what they're doing with kind of like research kit, and they announced three new studies, and now they're actually making a dedicated app that you can sign up for all this stuff in. So it's not like before, where everything was kind of ad hoc. You have to download a special app for the heart study, and then you have to go and do this, and you have to go and do that, and everything. So what they're announcing is the Apple Hearing Study with the World Health Organization and the University of Michigan, the Apple Women's Health Study with the Harvard School of Public Health, and then the Apple Heart and Movement Study, which is with the American Heart Association and the Brigham Health Hospital. And so, obviously, they're covering the noise detection in WatchOS 6 for the hearing stuff. They're using the cycle tracking data you're getting from the cycle tracking app for the women's health. And then, obviously, heart movement expands on what they did with the Apple Heart Study, which ultimately led to the discovery that, yes, you could actually detect arrhythmias using the watch hardware before the ECG even came out. So they're obviously building that in a big way, and there will be a dedicated Apple Research app that you can download from the store and actually access all of these studies if you actually want to take part. So they're basically taking what they kind of experimented with in previous years and like formalizing it into its own standalone thing. Like, you can get the research app, you can help us with studies, you don't have to follow all these weird steps for each individual little test run we've been doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is neat. I mean, I like that this occurs. It's cool to have one central location for it, and I have to imagine by making an app for this that it won't just be limited to these three, that each, you know, every so often we'll see new studies occur. And they did a good job with the heart study in following up with results from that, you know, and it feels like that kind of led into the ECG functionality on the Series 4, because part of that was if it detects, you know, changes in heart rate and alerts you to, then the next step was that you FaceTime with the doctor through the program, and then you wore a heart monitor for a little while and participated in that, and they published their results from the study. And so I imagine we'll see the same thing with these, and it's very cool that each one of these, like you said, you know, that they're using the new hearing stuff from WatchOS 6, they're using the new reproductive health stuff from WatchOS 6 for the Cycles app, and then incorporating movement into the heart study for something new. This is cool. US only, so it's limited to, you know, my side of the world, not yours, but making this so accessible that it's in an app, it's cool. And the heart study thing, like, that was its own app from Apple, and then there are research kit apps too, but the heart study seemed to come and go, and then the app is just, you know, once it was closed, the app has no more purpose. But having a dedicated research app is neat to see that it's not just a one-off thing, but just going forward, there'll be more of these. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a good direction for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So let's kind of break down the Apple Watch stuff. So always on display.
Well,
how it works.
Yeah. Let's talk about the presenters too, because there was no Jeff Williams, at on stage at the event, so in the audience, but not presenting. And in the past, he's presented Research Kit, which was like his first presentation. He's presented at least a couple of the new Apple Watches, and including last year's Series 4. And he's widely, you know, seen as the sort of the CEO in waiting, even though he's approximately Tim Cook in terms of like age and demographics and everything. I guess just from experience, people see him as like, you know, what if Tim Cook disappeared? Then who would lead Apple? It would be Jeff Williams. He wasn't a part of the keynote at all, so that's something to note. But the person who did present the watch, Stan Ng, this is his first time, right, on stage.
Yeah,
yeah, and he did a great job. Like, he was more interesting, and like Jeff Williams has like that sort of the Southern presentation, you know, of Tim Cook. Just it's North Carolina versus Alabama, you know, but. Having Stan Ng on, it was like he was more youthful and energetic, which felt necessary for the Series 5 presentation. Now let's unpack what the Series 5 is.
Yeah, so always on display. The way it works is it doesn't work on every app. It's limited to watch faces and the worker app, right? So it dims the display when basically all day long, right? So if you're on the clock face or you're in the worker app, your watch will always be showing something on the screen but not full brightness. And then they go beyond that by customizing, basically each watch face now has the active in use state when you're actually raising your wrist and using it and looking at it, and then the kind of dimmed always on state. And it's not like when you go, because one way they could have done this, right, is when you go into the always on mode, it's that it always goes to the exact same clock. So maybe they just have one analog layout and then one digital layout.
Mm-hmm. That's what we dreamed up, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like just a basic clock face, maybe with two hands for hour and minute, right? And then when you raise your wrist, it then fades into your watch faces. But excitingly, they've actually done much better than that, and they have customized every face for the dimmed mode. So like harsh colors get faded out and disappear, and then the second hand doesn't show. It's only hour and minute on the analog faces. But in general, you're getting most of the character and the ambiance and the design of your own watch faces in the dim mode. Like on the numerals face, when you're looking at it full up, the numbers are filled in like bright orange, and then when you're in dimmed mode, the numbers turn to just outlines. So they're not filled in anymore, but you can still obviously read the time.
And those are you want. Styles available for that face. So in theory, you know, or even in practice, some people will have the exact same face dimmed as they have as raised and bright. It's just the brightness level and the refresh rate is what changes. Because in most of my faces, like I think all my faces, I tend to prefer having more black than like white or color filled faces, just for like efficiency and to look more like it's blending in with the screen than a screen on a you know gadget. They're heavily showing colored faces, like white faces and color filled faces, to show off how it changes, like to demo it. But I think in practice, like a lot of people will have their face be the same, dimmed or bright. It's just the refresh rate and the brightness level that changes. And it's also complications. Like it's not just the time and the style of the watch face, but is it complications too?
The complications are visible in the dim mode.
Yeah.
I presume their like rates of refreshing and updating are reduced in the dim state, because they were in the current environment that they are reduced when you're not looking at the watch face. But obviously you don't know they're not updating because the face isn't turned on. So, and I presume it still does update on occasion. But it's not. It won't be like 1-to-1 in the same way that the second hand isn't visible, but the minute hand's still going to update.
I don't think people will even notice that, because like if I think of my complications and how many update minute by minute, it's pretty rare. Like temperature, you know, you can kind of forecast throughout the day and make some guesses about what it would be. And then, you know, it just checks in every now and then and updates. Activity rings, like the thing that's changing the most would be the move, maybe stand and move, but you know, or like during a workout, you're gonna have the most changes, but the workout app will be updated anyway, and that's what you're looking at. The heart rate complication I like to use to see the current heart rate, but even that updates every few minutes and not every second. So, you know, you'll see like 10 minutes ago, 5 minutes ago, things like that. So I think even that experience, people won't notice the difference. It'll just be there's a version of your watch face that's bright and one that's dimmed, but you can still see at a glance. Or in the dark.
Yeah,
because
one thing I can think of is like the noise app. Its complication updates in like real time.
Okay.
If you want to put the decibels on your watch face, you can do that, and the noise complication does update like instantly. But you know, in a dim state, it's probably not going to do that. But in reality, how many people are putting decibels on their watch faces in the first place? Like, I don't think anybody actually really wants that. And it'll probably just have the noise icon just, and then the rest will be blank. So it's like, oh, if you really want to know what the noise is, you just raise your wrist and it fills in the information.
Yeah. Or the people who use that, it's a very specialized case. One thing I can think of too is the new compass complication. Since there's compass in a compass app, that would react in real time to your movement. And if the face is off, then, maybe it won't, but we'll see how that, there are a lot of questions that we'll answer from having hands-on time with these watches. But just at delivery, you know, what they presented so far, it's more than I expected. Not to mention, we didn't expect Always On this year. Like, we would have thought that would be something that would have leaked through reporting or supply chain, however. And it requires, like, some changes to the display. It doesn't seem to be just in software. Now we say we can do it.
Yeah, they kind of have, like, a promotion-y type display where they can dynamically adjust the refresh rate on it. So, obviously, when you're using it, it's refreshing at 60 hertz. But in the dim mode, they can scale it way back down to even just, like, 1 hertz. So, that's one update per second, not 60 updates per second. And doing that on a display, like, dramatically reduces overall battery usage. So, that's... They've definitely done... You know, the watch isn't identical to the Series 4, but it is... is close, but the display is obviously new.
Yeah, so. And for me, like, so what I did with my Series 4 watch was I sold it, I listed it for sale for 30 day period on, I think, Friday at lunchtime, and so that it would be sold by lunchtime on Monday and would be out of my hands by keynote day, and I'd be paid for it. And I did that. And so no matter what happened on Tuesday, I was getting a new watch. Because I also used the program to replace the damaged Series 3 and Series 2 watches that were affected by the screen kind of being brittle and coming off and around the corners. That worked out for me. And so I had a Series 3 that was brand new repaired as like the fill-in watch between delivery and you know, presentation. But yeah, if you have a Series 4, it's definitely, I think, a bigger question than Series 3 to Series 4 as to whether you upgrade. It's more like the years, you know, from like, you know, I think first generation, everyone needed to upgrade for reasons of speed. But like Series 2, you know, did you pick Series 1 or Series 2? And then Series 2 to 3, it just depends on what you needed from it. This is like that too, where if you have a Series 4, I think for a lot of people, it's totally okay. And but if you were like me and upgrade every year, then it's a big enough change that it's noticeable. I mean, you'll see it literally all the time.
Yeah, they've definitely been holding on to Always On as like a thing they can roll out when they don't have other hardware changes, if you know what I mean. Almost like it's like the one software thing that makes a massive difference to the experience. And obviously they spent the last 4 years promoting a watch that just turns black when your wrist is down, and everyone was basically okay with that. Like, people mostly got on board with that thing.
Yeah.
And now obviously you get Always On, and it is way better. Now obviously all the marketing rides around. Well, of course, the display has to be on all the time.
Yeah. So well,
if you're a Series 4 user, you're not like jumping at the bit. I don't think it's great, but it's not like,
it depends on how much of an annoyance it is to not be able to glance at the screen. But I will say, not to oversell Always On as a new feature for this year, but if you think about it, like, first generation to Series 3, the changes weren't so tangible in that you could like look at them and see them. You know, you added GPS, which let you go for a workout without your Apple Watch or without your iPhone, and you could still track the location precisely. You still couldn't do maps yet with it unless you had the map preloaded. And then once you finished the course, it was gone. But you got the new workout stuff for tracking more accurately. With Series 3, you added cellular. If you bought the cellular,
Series 2 was waterproof as well.
Yeah.
So it was the swimming stuff.
Yeah, swimming stuff too. But nothing that you could like glance at and see. It was just how you use it. With Series 3, you got the big thing there was LTE. So if you got that option. but it wasn't how it looked at all. It wasn't like, you know, the reasons for the way it looked wasn't because that was a part of the feature. With Series 4, the big feature was how it looked with the redesign. But in people in my life, like if they have a Series 2, a lot of people needed that would look at my watch would need to be kind of shown what's different precisely about it. And I've even with our coverage of like the leak last year, I had reporters asking me, well, what's different? Like, you've got this new watch, but I don't know what's different.
It's kind of insane how many like mainstream customers or just mainstream people, like, you can show them
look at the bezel,
like,
difference,
a bezel-less screen, yeah, and a normal screen, and they can't like discern it.
Yeah, right? Like, I wish I was like that
phenomenon.
Yeah, I wish I were that way. But
yeah, same.
Yeah, but I'm not. But anyway, with Series 4, like, how it looked was the big thing. But like, ECG is a big impactful feature that has been credited with saving lives. But like, I've not yet benefited from it personally. You know, I've seen all the stories and covered many of them. The same with fall detection, you know, it's opt-in at our age. You've got to turn it on. And I've used that one time at the skating rink when I fell down, but not in the way that they intend it to be used. Like, you fall and you're unresponsive and it calls emergency services. So, you know, louder speaker, but not how, you know, how you look at it was a new case color. And then if you can discern the screen difference, you do get a bigger, you know, bigger screen sizes and less bezel. Always on, I think, is the, will be a thing that most people can appreciate at a glance, because it's a big difference. Your watch is off, your watch is on, you know. And you can see the time, you can't see the time. Like, so not to oversell it and say, well, this is like the biggest watch change ever. But I do think if you look at, you know, mainstream customers who aren't looking at the exact changes, like Compass won't be that. And then the international calling things won't be that.
Definitely won't be.
Yeah. Yeah. But the always on display will be. What I'll say after that is that for people who, like I know someone who needed to replace their Apple Watch this week, and they asked me about what's coming, and said, wait until the presentation to see, you know, what your options are. You know, the old watch will get cheaper, maybe something new that's compelling. And they didn't want a Series 3, but they didn't think that the Series 5, even with these cool prices that we'll discuss in a moment, was worth it for always on display. And I've seen more than one person say that they think it might even be a hindrance to have the display always on, and surely there's an option to turn it off, but if it's what you're paying for...
There will 100% be a saying for you to turn off always on if
yeah,
you don't
want it. Right, yeah. We just don't know that yet, but surely. But I've seen a few people say that they might not even want that if they had the Series 5, that the Series 4 at a discounted price is even more compelling now than before. So, but I did, again, you know, going back to what I was saying before, just at a glance, as a tangible feature that you can look at and sort of benefit from always, not just in case you need it. It's a big thing, and it's worthy of a Series 5 name for sure.
Yeah. Here's how I like say it is that if you're someone who's, if you just imagine a person who's never bought an Apple Watch before, right? And then you look at the list of reasons why they weren't interested in one, I reckon pretty high on that list would be the screen. I can't always see the time and I have to move my arm around. Like, that's a big hindrance to people who have come from normal watches, right? They don't. And even if it actually isn't so bad, and obviously it clearly isn't that bad because, you know, most people have been happy for the last 4 years, right? It's like, oh, you just twist it in some cases. It is like a psychological barrier to adopting the watch. It's like, I want to be able to see the time all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can. So I reckon there'd be a pretty big influx of brand new people to Apple Watch this year who, once they learn that the screen can actually stay on all the time, you know, will be more invested in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, the watch site Hodinkee, I think, and, you know, they're primarily like luxury watches, but they also cover the Apple Watch and usually the highest end Apple Watch of the year. I feel like in every review, they mention that the screen goes off, you know, and that no matter how good it becomes, otherwise, it's still not a watch in the way that a watch, you can always glance at it to the time. And now, finally, will be that, you know, no matter what, unless you've got a really bad glare, maybe, that you'll be able to see the time. It's compelling.
And for workouts, it's really good, because when I'm doing like a run or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and you just want to check how many minutes are left in your 30 minutes to go, on my watch, and Series 3 on Series 4, it doesn't matter, it always takes like a fraction longer when I'm raising my wrist just for it to show the metric for the metrics for the workout. I don't know why. It just always it's always slower than the watch face wrist raise. And you're in the middle of a workout, or you're doing like an activity that you can't really move your arm too much, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's actually inconvenient to do the wrist raise operation, which can happen in some workouts, just depending on what they are. Like, the fact that now the screen can stay on it and you can always just glance and read, you know, you see your goal metrics and see the time remaining and the duration and your current calories burned is like really, really useful.
Yeah, and unless you're hiking or something as a workout and the Compass is a big factor for you on the watch, then there aren't really any new health features this year, you know, from the hardware itself. But like you mentioned, having your workout be always on, if you're in that app and it's an active workout, That is like the best new health feature of this Series 5 watch. And it's not one that I would have guessed. Like, whenever we were doing our, you know, wish casting before and saying, always in display, at least show the time, you know, the hour hands or a second or a digital clock with no seconds on it. I don't think we ever mentioned, and you've got to include the workout app from day one. But they did. And that was a big part of the presentation, was look at all these examples that aren't just seeing what time it is, but it's also in ways that your body, you know, you don't have a free hand, or your Apple Watch isn't at the right angle to turn on the screen, so you cannot see your metrics. It's cool. It's a real benefit and a real good change here. I'm happy to try it. One thing I'll say is that, and I mentioned this to you, they continue to sell an Apple Watch Nike Plus version that has the Nike Running Club app pre-installed. And I credit that app with just getting me that watch and app from the Series 2 version with getting me into running and doing races and loving it. But the specific app, even as it updates for new watches over time, it's not gotten as good of a running app as the Apple Workout app has. Like, you don't get cadence, you don't get the same accurate calorie data from a workout. You don't get the pace alerts that the Workout app has. And now, if you buy an Apple Watch Nike Plus Series 5 with the cool new Nike faces, and you use the built-in, you know, app on those faces that it launches for run tracking, it isn't always on. And that's one of the big use cases of always on. And so eventually we could see that third-party apps get the same ability to optimize for always on, but it's not there yet. You know, who knows when it will be.
That's not in the SDK or anything. Like, right. It'd probably be a watchOS 7 API or something at the earliest.
And we could probably see Apple doing more than just the workout app over time for like always on modes.
Like timer app.
Totally. Yeah. So for that kind of thing, but not yet. You know, this is where they're starting with.
So compass is self-explanatory. You can see your north magnetic pole from your wrist. There's the dedicated compass app. There's a complication, and obviously they can use the compass data to help experiences, especially when you're like viewing a map. So your map can actually be orientated in the direction you're facing and stuff, which is, it's a small thing, but it's useful, especially doing like walking directions.
Yeah,
you can just have the map twist around so it's facing the right way. I do that on the iPhone all the time when I'm doing walking directions on the iPhone. I can just whoop and I'm right, and it's pointing the right direction, and you'll be able to do it on the watch as well, which is nice.
Yeah, I will admit, as recently as this past Saturday, as I was in Dallas, you know, looking for walking directions from the concert back to the hotel, that I found myself with my iPhone in my pocket, just using the Apple Watch naturally, you know, just tap, there's directions, walking directions. Tapping the location icon, the little triangle, you know, one more time, like once to find my current location, and then once more to orient in the direction that I'm standing, so I know what are these directions, like what is a right turn, you know, based on where I'm standing, and not realizing, oh, it can't do that because there's no compass built in. And by including a compass, now you can. I just, for some reason, imagined that was part of adding GPS or adding the barometer, but no, and now it is. So that's one of the things that I don't think anyone should upgrade for, but it's just, it like barometer is one of those things where they catch up with the iPhone, they pack in a new sensor this year, you know, a new piece of hardware, and it all adds up over time to a better watch experience. This episode of 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is brought to you by Monoware Design, one of the leading designers of high-quality and unique bands for Apple Watch. Monoware is actually one of the first companies to make a third-party Apple Watch band, and each unique band is designed in-house by a small group of Monoware creators located in Silicon Valley. Monoware uses multiple adapters and hardware choices that cater to different Apple Watch colors and reflects your personal style. And bands are available in a wide variety of options, including leather, nylon, and metal. A band for every occasion or activity. My favorite thing about Monoware Band is just the variety of bands that they offer. No matter what watch you have, whether it's 38mm or 40mm or 42 or 44mm, and they make great bands in like every color combination that you can imagine, for aluminum or steel or even the new titanium and ceramic options for Series 5. So if you want a great looking band without paying 4-digit numbers for the Apple Watch, Monoware Design has excellent bands. My favorite is one called the Perforated Leather Band. It comes in at $52, and with our promo code, you could even save some money at checkout. So support the podcast, support Monoware Band. We really appreciate it. Thanks again to Monoware for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour, get 15% off the company's premium Apple Watch accessories at monowaredesign.com/9to5Mac. That's monowaredesign.com/9to5Mac with promo code 9to5Mac15.
Okay, so explain international emergency calling, because obviously the watch has always had emergency calling through emergency SOS, and if you're in a different country, it's always localized the phone number it rings to that country.
Yeah, this is the fact that this is part of like the three new features of the Series 5 does highlight what an increment over the Series 4 it is. And then there was just so much stuff packed in last year because Always On is huge, Compass is minor. International calling is very niche, and they don't really get into it so much in the keynote. They do say it'll offer you peace of mind if you're traveling internationally. And the reason it's such a small thing is that you couldn't do this before. So you could call 911 in your home country if you're in the US. You could call 911 if you have an LTE watch, and your phone isn't with you. And you have service, you can call 911. I don't think you can do it without service. I think you have to have service for that. But if you went to another country, you couldn't. And the reason for that is there's no data roaming or call roaming on the watch. It's only in your country, even though the iPhone can do roaming. So if you want to call the local version of 911 in Europe when you're traveling abroad, you need your phone for that. Because it can roam and you can have those localized plans.
Because the watch just won't be able to call anything.
Right.
Because it doesn't support roaming.
Exactly. You still can't do data roaming or call roaming on the watch, as far as we know. That's not been said. So if you have service in the US and you have you go to another country, like you go to Mexico, for example, and your phone has a plan that supports roaming in Mexico with no extra charges, just part of your plan. That doesn't mean your watch can connect to service there. If you go without your phone, it's like you have a non-cellular watch. But there are now, I think, 150 countries at least that you can press the side button down on your watch if you have cellular and an active plan, and the watch will detect which country you're in and call the right service. So you go from, you hold the button down and it fails to make any kind of a call because there's no call roaming to, now it can both make that call and it knows which country you're in. So 911 is the US, but it varies from country to country. So now it can figure out where you are and make the right call for you, even without your phone. Like, that's the big thing.
So it's enabling call roaming, but just for emergency calling.
Right. Which
leads to the question, if they can do it for emergency calling, why can they not do it in general?
Yeah, and it seems to be hardware specific to the Series 5. So maybe that's something that's different about the S5 chip, that, you know, that's a system in a package where it isn't just the processor, but it's the modem too, right? So maybe there's something different there that makes it the same speed as the S4, but you now have a different modem that works with calling emergency services internationally through some loophole. It does not support international data roaming like you can do on the iPhone, but it is very niche. You know, you've got to be traveling, have a plan, and also need that functionality for it to be useful.
And not have your phone with you.
I mean, if you have your phone with you, it's also convenient to do it from your wrist and not pull out your phone.
True, that's fair.
And if you have your phone, you still do the thing where you squeeze both buttons down and it makes the call for you. But, you've got to know how to do that and then also pull out your phone. So it's cool, but it's a very minor feature. And to be included...
It would have been nicer if they could have wrapped it into... Now you can do roaming over cellular.
Right, exactly. Just like you can do your iPhone. And to be one of the three new features, it just highlights, you know, what a small year it is year over year for the Apple Watch. You know, the big thing
it just shows how much they're leaning on Always On. Like,
right.
That is the premier feature. It's a big feature. It's mostly software, but it's still substantial. That's enough.
Yeah, like we had a little discussion before we started recording with whether, you know, they highlight having an ambient light sensor in the display. That was part of the stage, you know, keynote. And I thought, well, that's a new feature, right? For to have an ambient light sensor that can detect the brightness of the room. And you looked it up. No, it's been there since day one. It's a new sensor. It's a new version of it, we suppose. But it's been there from before. So
yeah, because the watch already, like, the watch has three brightness modes, but. Mm-hmm. they're not like absolute values. If you go into a dark room, it will dim the screen. If you go into a bright room, it will brighten the screen.
Yeah, the big change seems to be this LPTO stuff, right? Which is, like you mentioned, similar to, you know, doing promotion on the iPad, where the refresh rate can vary. And that's how that's what they're touting on the Series 5, is this is how we can do always on, is it's not literally always on, but that we can change, you know, both the presentation and the refresh rate to do always on and still sustain up to 18 hours of battery life, which they call all day battery. That's the thing there. So yeah, it's cool. Again, you know, the materials are the biggest change, you know, having ceramic return. This is the first time ceramic has been an option in this design, you know, since the Series 3. You had Series 2 with white ceramic. You had Series 3 with white and gray ceramic. Gray did not return. White did. And you know, before I think you had more ceramic in the whole case, too, because the back wasn't – you had more white – the white ceramic in the back, because now it's like this big, like, black thing. And less of like the white ceramic material, but it looks very good to me. Like it's like, to me, not to sound like Johnny Ive, but it's like the best expression of the Apple Watch, you know, to me. You've also got titanium in, you know, the difference on titanium and aluminum or stainless steel are a few things. Stainless steel is polished, so it's like reflective. Even with black, there's some like mirroring effect to it. With titanium, there's not a reflective nature to it. It's they call it brushed metal, because you can literally see like these lines on the pattern, you know, where it's not reflective. It's more matte than shiny, but it's still metallic. Let's see this in person before we really get a sense of what they look like, because the pictures on Apple.com vary from the pictures of the hands-on, which I imagine vary from like using them in real life. But you've got two colors. You've got titanium and then space black titanium, which has the diamond-like coating, which is just like with the space black stainless steel to make it protective. They tout doing their own material approach to this so that you don't have fingerprinting issues or staining issues, which I think titanium otherwise would be susceptible to. So it will be very nice, stainless or titanium. It's also... what they say is 45% lighter than stainless steel. So if you want a premium watch that isn't heavy and hefty, ceramic is like the heftiest one of all. Then there's stainless steel. Titanium will be almost half the weight of stainless steel. I haven't looked at how the numbers compare to aluminum yet, but like aluminum has always been like the lightest one. Surely if it was lighter than aluminum, they would have said so. But at any rate, it will feel like aluminum, because it's such a small number anyway that it's in that range.
Just aesthetically, it kind of looks like an aluminium that's been unfinished. It kind of just looks like raw blank aluminium, because it's just like scratched, you know, like the lines in it just kind of look like unmilled aluminium that haven't been like polished yet.
Yeah. It doesn't have the gloss finish of stainless steel. Or, you know, polished stainless steel or ceramic, which is very glossy too. It's definitely got that matte look to it, like aluminum. And in some ways, just from what I've seen so far, like I might love it in person when I see it, but I've already gone through the process of clicking buy and then instantly canceling, because I just have to see it first before I know if that's what I want. It kind of faces the same challenge that gray ceramic had, which is, at a glance to the naked eye, it kind of just looks like space gray. You know, this is like that, where it kind of just looks like silver and space gray aluminum, unless you see the pattern and kind of feel it and you're up close to it. So we'll see how it works. But you know, one of the big questions we had before the event was, will titanium replace stainless steel? Will it be, you know, lighter and similar in price that you could just have that option? And the answer is no, that it is similar in price. It's like $100 more expensive for titanium than stainless steel. And it is...
Yeah, it's $799.
Yeah, instead of $689. Both are in the lineup. Both have the two colors. You don't get a gold option for titanium. You do get the gold for stainless steel. But I think the reason that they both exist is that they're different enough in appearance that Apple says, if you want this look, you want steel. If you want this look, you want titanium. It's very different to the eye. What do you think about this so far?
Yeah. I think clearly it being at $799 versus $699 means they could have, you know, replaced wholesale titanium with, sorry, stainless steel with titanium if they wanted to, but clearly they're offering it as another option. Obviously, it's really hard to tell from hands-on photos, videos, and then Apple's online photography, but I'm not, like, bowled over by the titanium at all. I just think it looks almost like an unfinished, and I know that's kind of the point, but it doesn't float my boat. I think white ceramic is still by far the best looking Apple Watch. Also, it's also the most expensive, obviously. It's like
by a lot,
1400. Yeah. And it's funny that they actually call titanium edition, mm-hmm. even though the price is a lot lower. Like, so it being I wonder what edition like means nowadays. Does it just mean it's going to come in and out and like disappear? Like, it's not necessarily going to stay around if they do another redesign watch next year. Are the editions ceramic and titanium going to disappear again?
Like, yeah.
What classifies? Why is that one called edition and then the stainless steel isn't?
Yeah,
like, and especially like gold stainless steel. That one was looks like the original Apple Watch edition. So right. They don't call that edition, but they call the titanium edition.
Yeah, they even do a new thing this year with the band for the gold stainless steel, where they've got the classic, or no, not the classic, the modern buckle leather strap with like big metal buttons or buckles on it, and metal lugs. They have a version now. It's what, aubergine, or however you say that, aubergine. It's like a purpley kind of color that has gold metal. That's the first time since the original Apple Watch edition, which had like, I think it had like a red as a color, maybe like the rose pink kind of color, like cream pink.
Yeah, navy blue.
Navy blue, yeah. Now you've got that band in like the saddle brown color with silver connectors, which I think has existed, and then you've got it in black with black metal, which is the first time for that, but then you've also got it in that aubergine color with gold, which is the first time that you can get more than just the Milanese loop or the sport band with a gold pen. Now you've got one more option there, so that's kind of cool. But in the past, they've done something special with like the packaging for the edition, at least, where you get like this booklet about how the metal is produced, and you know, it's like a mini version of the Apple book, but it's specific to that material. You've also included in the packaging, you've had the magnetic charging dock, where it's that like white pad where the watch charger, you know, can be flat or stand up on its own. I don't know that that's continue to be included anymore either.
I bet that's at least not in the titanium one.
Yeah. And it's not on the product page for the ceramic one either. I'm not sure if it ever, I think it was before. The book I don't think was, but you know, we'll see when these things actually start shipping. But one thing you do get with three collections or two collections and three materials now is with stainless steel Hermes, you pick your leather band, you know, style band that you get, and then you always get the same Hermes orange sport band with like an Hermes kind of stamp on the metal clasp. And so I think that continues to be around. I haven't looked it up since last year, but I think that continues to be a thing. So you get that in the box plus your leather band. With titanium, you pick the band that you want, whether it's a sport loop or a leather loop, and then you always get a kind of light gray colored sport band. So no matter what, you get a sport band. And then with addition, the first one was called a cloud. I think it was called cloud. But it was a white sport band with a white ceramic pen to it. Then the next year they did soft white for the white version. So a little bit different tone to it or hue to it. Still with a ceramic pen. This year I was a little bit disappointed at first because that's the watch that I want. And the options were sport loops or leather loops. And sport loops are those, like, they have like the plastic ends to them and they're like Velcro-y. And I don't really love that band. I like the approach, but it's not for me. And then leather loop is cool, but it has stainless steel as the metal, not ceramic. So it's just like you could buy it before. But they still bundle what used to be the only band that came with it in the box, which is the soft white sport band with the ceramic pin on it, which is the only thing I care about getting. So that makes it addition. Like Hermes has its own thing. And so stainless steel, you just get whatever band you pick. You don't get a second band to it. And I guess that's part of the classification here. But like you said, maybe it also is that it will come and go in terms of the material. We'll see.
So yeah, I think the space, at least just based on the pictures, the space black titanium is not as good looking as the polished stainless steel space black.
Agree, yeah.
And the normal brushed titanium just kind of looks like space gray aluminium.
Yeah. But if you want a different look for the year, or you prefer like a more rugged look, it definitely is that, you know, where it's like more like rocky and rugged. If you don't want to spend $1,400 for the ceramic version, but you want a different watch than you've had every year so far, you know, or you just like that rugged look to it, it is cool looking. It's just, if I were ranking them, I wouldn't rank it above stainless steel. And unless you just want something different for the year. And it's all personal.
And the prices stay the same for, like, it still starts at $399 for GPS and then $499 with cellular. And what was kind of a surprise is that they actually let you order it the same day. Mm-hmm. So normally the ordering for the watch happens on the Friday with the iPhone, like the pre-orders, but this time around, they let you just do it straight after the keynote ended, and they start shipping from September 20th. So, you must have ordered one, right?
I've ordered and canceled a few times, but I'm going to get one.
Have you currently ordered and not canceled one?
No. I've got nothing coming as of this moment.
Because I thought you'd be right on the ceramic, like you've been talking about the whole year.
Yeah, well, no, what got me was the temptation by the titanium, because, I mean, the difference in price is a big thing. You know, it's 700, or is it 800 versus 1400, so it's the big difference there.
Yeah.
And it's also the newest material. Like, I was talking with Jeff Benjamin about, you know, his YouTube coverage for 9to5 Mac, and it's like, he asked, what would be the best watch to show on video? And I was like, oh, by far, titanium, not ceramic, because it's the most new material that people will be curious about. You know, we've seen ceramic already. And then I was like, that conversation convinced me to, you know, try the space black titanium and see if you like it or not. And then within like moments, I had that, you know, doubt, like, that doesn't bring me joy. What I want is what I've wanted since before the Series 4, you know, existed. And so what I'm going to do is I want to go to the Apple store on launch day anyway to see the new stuff. And so I think I'll just buy it in person versus like wait for FedEx to come like in the afternoon on launch day. I'll do like that morning instead. Cause there's no benefit of like, I don't think inventory will run out on any of these, but especially that one. And I think it will be in stores. So yeah, that's what my current plan is.
Yeah. I 100% expect you end up with white ceramic. Cause yeah, I just think
me too.
The titanium is nice, but it's not nice enough to be out what you've been thinking about for
Correct.
Years.
Yeah.
And the white ceramic is by far the best looking Apple Watch they sell. Obviously, mm-hmm. it's also the most expensive, but it is definitely the nicest if you want to pay for it.
Yeah. With the Nike watches this year, so there's no changes to the aluminum in terms of the color options that you've got. You still got silver, space gray, and gold for aluminum, and then silver, space gray for Nike aluminum.
Yeah, they didn't do like 10R colors like you were kind of hoping.
Yeah, like I've been hoping for, or 11 colors, as they have introduced this year. So that's still for another year, I think, if they ever do that. Like a product red watch would be pretty cool. But the Nike ones do have, you know, new colors of bands. There's no new style of band, but they do have new watch faces. And so if you recall last year, they had this one new analog watch face, which was like just to show that the watch is now full screen, but there was no new digital Nike face. And now they're are more Nike faces, including one that's digital and two that are analog, I believe. And the one that is analog is sort of, it's exactly what Rambo had leaked before, which is, look at my notes here. It's based on a Nike jacket. I think it's called the Wind Runner. Yeah, Wind Runner, which is, you know, decades old jacket style that Nike's produced. And I've got one made last year where it's sort of angled. And what they show in all of the press material is like, the same time they always show, I think, where it's like, or maybe it isn't. Maybe they're showing a different time to be more like that's what the jacket looks like. But at any rate, I think that the minute and hour hand controls the color on the dial, and it has that angled look to it. So it's like the Windrunner jacket style. So it's good that in absence of last year having a new digital watch face for Nike at all, this year they do have at least one, and there are also two more analog faces. It's much more compelling if you buy that watch for those faces.
Yeah, the other analog face is kind of like California, but for Nike, sort of.
Yeah, it's like California, solar analog face, sort of like that, yeah, where it's
like a blend of those two.
Yeah, based on a circle, but you've got some information around there. And presumably those faces all, you know, they all have the Nike icon, and presumably they still launched the Nike Run Club app. So that's what that is for. The Hermes collection changes with new band styles, but also for the first time ever, you can now get a space black Hermes watch. They've always been silver stainless steel, and now they also have space black, which I think is really compelling, because at launch with the first Apple Watch, space black was a premium. And then they added space black with the black sport band, and it was, if it was a premium, it was very small, and then they were the same price eventually. So why not do those with Hermes? And this year they do. They've got, I think they look really great. Like, if it's anything that competes to me with the white ceramic Apple Watch edition, it's the Hermes watch in space black with the black leather band. And it's because Apple doesn't do its own classic buckle bands anymore. They've just given that away to Hermes entirely. And Hermes's were nicer anyway, but you know, that's it. But now they've got black leather bands with black metal clasps and lugs for those. So it's sharp looking to me. And you get the Hermes faces. But the only thing that holds me back is that my favorite band ever at any price point is the sport band. Like, that's what I think of as an Apple Watch. And I believe you still get the orange Hermes band and probably with a black clasp on that. But that's the biggest thing, is that I know day to day I won't use the Hermes faces. And I likely won't use a leather band very often, especially for like occasions. And I also think that the sport band can be very nice too. So that's the biggest thing, aside from that, those are also expensive. So might as well just go ceramic. But they exist now.
Yeah, I'm not at least currently planning on buying a Series 5.
Hey, you've got a Series 4. It makes sense.
I got a Series 4. Oh, I'd always seen Always On as something far in the distance, if that makes sense.
True. So
I bought the Series 4 obviously knowing, with no expectation that Always On was around the corner, or that I was actually bothered about it. Obviously, I've had an Apple Watch and worn every day since the beginning. I am, obviously it'd be nice to have it, and especially for the workout mode, because I swear it hurts me the hardest.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to buy a whole nother watch just for that.
It won't take you to the next level.
Yeah, exactly. So, and there's quite a lot of stuff that I'm probably going to buy this year, so something's got to give. So I think the watch is going to be on the back burner for now. My brother is getting one, so at least I can like play around with his and try out the Always On stuff and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, I'm just going to stick with my Space Gray Series 4 for at least another year.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I mean, I've had people on Twitter ask me, they've got a Series 3, should I upgrade? And if you ask the question, then there's probably some hesitation there. And so I tend to say no. That it, you know, unless you're positive, my advice would be just wait, because there'll always be something better next year, even if it's incremental, as we've seen this year. And the fact that they still sell the Series 3 in the lineup for a reduced price suggests that they plan to support that for a while, and that it's also a good out-of-the-box experience even today, with no processor change there. I am running watchOS 6 on the Series 3 as my Series 4 is sold. And the Series 5 is not out yet. And I definitely see like serious lagginess and like animations and everything. And I wouldn't want this to be like my watch for a year. But if that doesn't bother you and it's just what you're used to, then maybe wait for like Series 6 or something, you know, and see, you know, a sign might be when the Series 6 isn't sold brand new today, even at a value, then that's when you should upgrade. You know, obviously you can't apply that to the Series 4. It's not sold anymore, but that's because, like with the 10 to 10S, the changes are so small that by price cutting last year's thing, it would just be too compelling for people that care about the price, and they wouldn't get the new thing. So, yeah.
So Series 3 is $199 now, which is a really, really good price for, like, if you're just looking for the Apple alternative to a fitness band or mm-hmm. like a fitness, like the Fitbit Versa is obviously like the Apple Watch's leading competition, and that has always had like a price tick over the watches, because the watches have always been a lot more expensive, and the Series 3 can definitely go toe-to-toe with like the Fitbit lines that are $150 around that, you know, around that level. So getting a Series 3 down to $200 new from Apple, which then means it'll also be like $150 probably at some third-party places, is really, really, really good. And I would hope that some of the like sluggishness that you see on WatchOS 6 on the third generation mm-hmm. will be cleaned up a bit, because WatchOS 6 is shipping only for Series 3, Series 4, and Series 5 on the 20th. It does not come out for the Series 1 or the Series 2 until, quote-unquote, later this fall. Mm-hmm. So that basically implies there's still some performance optimizations they need to do
yeah.
to make it okay. So fingers crossed, the Series 3 experience, at least performance-wise, will improve with a software update in a couple of months.
Yeah, and by the way, that one in price, like, so I told you I bought my daughter, who is 6, a Garmin, I think it's called VivoFit Junior 2, which I love. I shared with you the app experience where you can, like, create points for chores and have rewards and see motion tracking or step tracking and also sleep tracking, which is really compelling, considering Apple did not do that yet with their own first-party apps. But that's $70 with a $200 watch brand new. It's compelling. Like, you know, it's still too much when you need an iPhone as well. But if you happen to have an iPhone already, you're at the appropriate age and everything, then $200 is, I mean, that was like the price of like iPods and, you know, iPod Nanos and Touches at certain like capacities. And so it's for an Apple Watch, it's pretty compelling. You have to have an iPhone for now, but it's a good price for the item itself. The Nike Feel Band, for comparison, in 2013 when it was brand new, which is a glorified step tracker, but this has like, it turned like steps into Feel Band or credit, was $150, and that didn't do much at all. It's a really compelling price for an Apple Watch Series 3, and you can still get cellular in those. You may pay a little bit more, but you can. So all in all, I'm really happy with the Series 5 update that we saw at the event. Expectations were pretty low. We got what we wanted in terms of titanium and ceramic. That was awesome. And then we got things that we didn't expect to see. You know, compass I won't include. International calling for emergencies I won't include. But always on display. Big surprise. And they've kind of done yep. it really well. Have they shown how, like, the not Series 4 Plus faces look in this? Because they said they updated all the faces, and they've shown a bunch of examples in their you know, slides. But do you see, like, the utility face for, like, Mickey Mouse and stuff like that? Or
that is an open question, because, like, what does the astronomy face look like, which is one of their most heavily 3D-ified faces, mm-hmm. right? Because it just shows, like, the globe.
Well, like, Mickey Mouse is, like, his hands and the arms. Like, it's probably just dimmer, but
I would expect Mickey Mouse's hands and arms don't move when it's dimmed.
Yeah, there's no like tap for the foot, which is the second. And then the arms are the hour and minute, and those just need to change every minute. And there's also a monochrome version of that they've had for a little while. So maybe they even took out the color, but they do color on these. They just do like outlines of color. So that'll be one of the things that we try out when there's a, you know.
Yeah, I expect most of those faces are just dim. And then, obviously, stuff like the foot tapping will just freeze down. Because clearly, in the dim mode, they're using that one hertz refresh. So you're not going to have animation.
Yeah.
Update at most once a second.
Even, like, it's a question, too, for the photo faces. Those are probably just very dimmed out photos. They can't do a black outline there, obviously. The time-lapse faces, those are only motion when you raise your wrist. Same for, like, the jellyfish faces, one called motion, with butterflies and jellyfish and things like that. So it'll be fun to see what are the old faces like. And what they've shown so far, before we move on from the watch, they do a great job of like making ads for this stuff. They did one ad that's like, here's everything the watch can do, including telling time. That's pretty cheeky. But it does a good job of like being comprehensive about the things that it's been able to do from day one up until now. They just added over the years. And then the other ad where they just introed the watch at all was really cool. Like it was it's like this like pinkish reddish like blur moving across the screen, only to reveal that was the watch face of someone dancing. And when you're dancing, the watch face isn't always on. And they've made that super cool to show, and now you raise your wrist and it fills in with color. And they've always shown like the watch face on in marketing material because they've had to show the watch at all. But even from like the first magazine cover where the watch is like on an athlete, you know, turned on, wrist lowered, those can be real now when they haven't been able to be before.
Yeah, just on a stagecraft perspective, the Apple Watch segment was really well done all the way through. It was well paced, had good information, and it kind of like almost wrapped up a better product than what it is. Because if you actually drill in the details, you can see that it's basically always on display and nothing else. But sure, that's what makes a good presentation, right? If the product seems better than it is, then that means that, you know, the marketing team and the keynote team have done a good job. And
yeah, that's
the
true.
Apple Watch segment was definitely really well made.
Yeah, and they've lowered the price of Leather Loop and Milanese by $50. They used to be $150, now they're $100. That's a cool thing. And the presenter, the last thing I'll say on the watch is the presenter Stan Ng. It's always fun for me to like look at the shoes of the presenters, and he had Nike Joyride shoes, which just came out like last month, and they're these shoes with like these beads in them for like compression support. And I've got a pair, and he had blue, which just came out. They originally like one like white multicolored color, and I've got black, which came out at the same time as blue. But I just thought that was neat, a new face that I didn't know before. And he totally coordinated his blue Nike Joyride running shoes with his like blue ring on his finger, like a silicone ring, and blue watch band and like blue polo shirt. So I appreciated that much. And then after the watch presentation, everyone had an always on display, you would notice. So that was neat.
We've all read some surprising online reviews, right? Whether you're trying to get a sweet deal on something you've been saving for, or trying to find the best happy hour in town, it's generally a good idea to read the reviews first. So why should finding the right software for your business be any different? Read thousands of real software reviews and find the right software for your business at Captera.com/happy hour. Not familiar with Captera? Captera is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. With over 1 million reviews of products from real software users, discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Search more than 700 specific categories covering the entire range of business needs, from project management to email marketing to even running your own yoga studio. No matter what kind of software you're looking for to get your business off the ground or to simply optimize existing workflows, Captera makes it easy to discover the right solution and fast. How do you get started? Go to Captera.com and drill down into a subcategory like app design, home building, insurance, or banking. It's completely free to look around and explore what's available. Don't trawl the web with endless Google searches. Captera brings everything together into one simple-to-browse directory. Join the millions of people who use Captera each month to find the right tools for their business. Visit Captera.com/happy hour for free today. Find the tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Captera.com/happy hour. Captera, Captera.com/happy hour. Captera, software selection simplified. So, the iPhone. Obviously, the iPhone. This is the iPhone event. This is what most attention is on in the world. And I'd say, unlike the watch, which was a surprise in terms of its product offering, the iPhone basically slotted into the rumors and expectations, right, on both the 11 and the Pro. So I wasn't overwhelmed. I wasn't underwhelmed. It was basically at par with the rumor mill and the reporting and the expectations.
Yeah, you're buying a new iPhone this year, and my feet are in concrete on this. I'm not. And the only thing I'll say in this so far is that you don't get always on display for the iPhone, but surely that will come in the future next. Because Android doesn't, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of Apple Watch features, even just like a dynamic clock face and complications. And whereas you look at the lock screen of the iPhone and it's pretty static and uncustomizable, that, you know, iOS could learn a lot from watchOS and
nightstand mode.
Just keep waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, iPhone 11, which is the iPhone XR successor, as expected, was presented by Kaiann, and she did a good job. They have new colors, but it does use the dual camera system, as rumored, in the new square bump design. But because it only has two cameras, not three, it centers the flash in the second like column, basically, and it has the two cameras above and below. And they made a big deal out of the fact that this glass back is essentially unibody, because all of the bump and all of the little inlets of the camera and stuff are all milled from a single piece of glass. It's not like the XS series, where you have the base glass and then you have the bit sticking out the middle, which is a completely separate component. This is essentially a glass shell and the cameras just poke through.
Mm-hmm.
It comes in white, red, black, green, yellow, and a purpley color. But unlike the XR, which was very bold in the tone of its colors, all of the iPhone 11 colors are very, very pale and kind of washed out. They're like much more muted.
Well, I think that the XR colors were a bit muted too, like compared to the 5C plastic colors. Those are more like, and compared to the iPod aluminum colors.
Correct.
But they're even more pale this year.
They're even more pale now, yeah. Like, the iPhone XR colors looked pretty bold on the website, and then when you got it in your hand, it was much more toned down,
mm-hmm.
right? And the iPhone 11 colors are toned down from the get-go. They're almost like tinted whites, almost. Like,
mm-hmm.
they're not bold colors.
They look nice.
Which is an interesting direction.
Yeah.
As I predicted, so I'm very happy about this one, the dual camera system is the normal wide camera, which is the 1X, and ultra-wide lens. So unlike the XS and the iPhone X and the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 7, blah, 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 where it was 2X, 1X, so you get the zoom, you get the 2X optical zoom in, the iPhone 11 is normal mode and then zoom out. So that's 0.5X. You're going ultra-wide. You're getting 120-degree field of view.
That's a good call, I think. I think it's a good call because ultra-wide will fill the newest this year anyway. It gives you a very different picture than what 2X gives you. You can do digital zoom anyway. So if you're making the choice, I would choose that if I were like configuring it on my own.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. And it probably, and obviously Apple gets all this data and they get all this information. I think average consumers, when they're using their phone, they're more likely to be wanting to go wide than they are to zoom in. Primarily because of like group photos and stuff. People just want to get the environment, or they're at a party and they want to get everyone in. Like, you don't want to have to like lean really far with your arm or get someone else to hold the camera and take the picture for you. And ultra wide solves that well. Whereas zooming in on stuff, in most cases, when you're zooming in, you can just move closer to the
object. People in my life, like family and friends, do not care about the difference in digital and optical zoom. You know,
yeah,
they're not afraid to go 10x, you know, by pinching way in, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, they've got a new camera UI to kind of support the ultra wide lens, and this is basically what we've been asking for since the iPhone X came out, because the iPhone X camera was the same as all the camera app UIs before it, and they just put black bars on the top or bottom to maintain the aspect ratio. So the camera design today is very, very black with just like the viewfinder in the center. What they're doing with iPhone 11, iPhone 11 Pro on the camera is the bits that would be black now are translucent,
mm-hmm.
and you can see. So if you're in 1X mode, you get the 1X camera in the place where it always is, and then it fills in what would be black with data from the ultra-wide lens to fill out the scene. So you can almost peek at the edges and intuitively go, oh, I actually want to get this in the shots. So then I zoom out, and obviously then it transitions automatically to the ultra-wide lens mm-hmm. itself.
Yeah.
So it's a clever little thing, and this is also one of the big features of these phones, is that you can actually, apps and obviously Apple can stream data from multiple lenses at the same time. Like, it's not, you have to... It's not you're in this mode, then you're in this mode, then you're in this mode. They can accumulate image data from both lenses simultaneously, and they actually just use that in the camera app UI to give you a more like engrossing and ambient experience, which I think is really, really nice. They also said like they've got this new upgraded smart HDR and new algorithms and all that jazz, where they're kind of identifying people and relighting the scene to emphasize people and faces, which is most of the time what you want. The portrait mode is obviously a question, because on the dual camera phones, portrait mode used the parallax difference between the 2X lens and the normal wide angle lens. But obviously the iPhone XR came out with a single camera, and Apple provided portrait mode for that purely through software. With the iPhone 11, the portrait mode is still powered purely by software. The ultra-wide lens does not contribute to the portrait mode at all. It's just they're using, you know, the power of the A13 chip and then upgraded algorithms to provide a better portrait mode experience.
And you can snap, you can take pictures of pets now too, right?
Yeah, you can do pets and objects now, which of course the Google Pixel, which has been a single camera phone forever, has always been able to do portrait mode virtualized on pets and objects.
Yeah, how'd they say that? It was something stereoscopic? I don't know. But...
Something.
Yeah, some camera jargon. I don't know.
They, always in these camera segments, they love to throw in a load of jargon that nobody really knows what's going on.
Yes.
But so yeah, portrait mode for pets and objects, powered by software because it doesn't have the telephoto camera. Night mode, importantly, which is obviously something I've been banging on about ever since the, you know, Google did it, and then Samsung did it, and then Huawei did it, and everyone's been doing it apart from Apple, and now Apple's doing it too. It seems like, yeah, it, obviously, all the stuff with the cameras on both the 11 and the Pro, it's all kind of like tentative until we can actually try it and find out, because every year Apple shows really impressive pictures as demo pictures for the new phone, and then you get in your hand and you can never reproduce what the demo pictures are. So you kind of have to like take them on their word a bit, and then, you know, the proof is in the pudding later. But the night mode that they're going for here seems to take a slightly different like tone to what I think the Android cameras do. And the Android cameras are fine, but I think Apple is going for a more like ambient mood.
It's more authentic than artificial. Where instead of making a nighttime scene look like daytime, as if you used a flash, a really big flash, it's more like a nighttime picture with way more detail, right?
Yeah, like a nighttime picture, but you can actually see stuff in it.
Yeah.
But you still think it's nighttime. Whereas you can see some pictures on the Pixel, and it can make it look like day, which is very impressive, but it's also kind of like unfaithful to the scene.
It's not what you remember, right?
Yeah, and it might, and I think a lot of times people want to, like if you're at a party again, like people want to know that it's like night. They don't want it to look like a massive flashlight's in front of their face. So I think it's an interesting alternative way to do it, and it certainly fits more of Apple's like overall camera aesthetic. They're also doing some clever stuff with how the night mode is like implemented and shows on the screen, because on Android phones, generally, you have to like switch to a night mode camera, and then you're just shooting night mode photos. The way the iPhone's going to do it is it's just integrated into the main camera, and it will sense if it thinks it can take a night shot and it'd be beneficial. And so then a night indicator will appear on the screen, and you can tap that button if you want to turn the night mode off for any reason.
Mm-hmm.
But it will default to like coming up and being on, but you don't have to like switch to a different camera, because obviously when you do like slow-mo, you have to switch to the slow-mo camera. But for night shots, they're trying to make it as seamless as possible by it being just in the main photo camera. It will give you a real-time preview in the viewfinder, but it will still require what the Android manufacturers do, where they require longer exposures to get nicer photos. So if you're on the night mode, when you're previewing a dark scene, on the screen, it will tell you when you take this picture, you should not jerk your hand away immediately, because it will say like 3 seconds or 5 seconds, right? Because that means hold for 3 seconds after you've taken the shutter. And in that time is when it collects all the different exposures and then blends them together. Interestingly, it can even know if you're using the iPhone handheld or like docked. So if you put your iPhone 11 in a tripod and set it up, it can use the motion sensor to know that you're not holding it with your hand and it's vibrating and jiggling about everywhere, being unsteady. And the exposures that it suggests will be much longer. So you can have like, so if you're doing it handheld, it's realistic going to be like 3 seconds, maybe 5 seconds tops. But if you stabilize the phone, it will take night shots that are like 10 seconds, 15 seconds with the shutter open. So it's collecting, you know, if it notices that you're not in a situation where it's going to be noisy because of, you know, handshake, it's going to be able to automatically collect a lot more information, and presumably the final result will be a lot more impressive. So it's little details like that that are nice to see, because essentially night mode is a catch-up feature, right? Mm-hmm. But at least it's not one-to-one. They are pushing the boundaries in some way. The front camera has also been upgraded. All the front cameras on the iPhone so far are 7 megapixel. Now it's 12 megapixel. And I think more importantly, it's 12 megapixel with a wider field of view. So, because the Google Pixel has two front cameras, and you can switch to basically doing a wide-angle front selfie. The iPhone only has one camera on the front, but they're making it a bigger, a more wide angle than what you've ever had on the iPhone to date. And by default, when you're in portrait, it will crop the image data to make it just look like your previous camera. So you essentially slice out a 7-megapixel portrait photo from the 12-megapixel sensor, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then if you turn the phone to landscape, or I think there's a button on the camera app as well, it will then activate like the front selfie wide mode so you can fit more people in the frame. Which I think is a really cool little addition, because you're always, you know, when a lot of time you're doing selfies, you're doing other people and you really want to fit everyone in.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to add not just a higher quality front sensor, but also extend the range.
Or a cool location, like look where I am.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a good sign. They also doing this, they talked a lot about making, they called it like the highest quality video ever in a smartphone, but without kind of explaining what they're doing, but they showed a demo video of some video that looked cool. They're extending the dynamic range up to 4K 60fps. So kind of what they do with photos, where they're doing like smart HDR and extending the dynamic range, they're now doing a much wider color range and color depth while you're doing videos. And unlike a lot of Android phones, you can do 4K at 60 recording on both the normal camera and the ultra wide, because I still don't really understand this, but a lot of the Android phones, you can only do 4K at 60 on one of the lenses and the other ones are limited. But for the iPhone, it's 4K at 60 across the board, which is great. They've got this kind of like new, this isn't hardware at all, but they're obviously limiting it in the software.
Yes.
It's called Quick Take. And it's kind of Snapchat-like, where when you take a video, when you take a picture, you just tap the sensor, you just tap the shutter button, right, and it takes a picture.
Uh-huh.
But now, without having to switch to the video camera, you can just hold down the shutter, and it starts recording a video, which is really, really useful when you think about it, because there's a lot of times where you're just like taking pictures, oh, you want to capture a video? Oh, do I really want to swipe to the side and then wait and then click? No, you can just literally hold the button down, and it just immediately starts shooting a video. Which I think is a really cool little feature.
Yeah,
the UI looks really nice.
Yeah, is it that maybe the chip can power in, not missing a beat, where on older phones it might not be able to? Like, I'm trying to justify why this is not on the XS, for example. But there's got to be some intelligence about, like, you press the button and for like that, whatever it is, like 2 seconds, you want to maybe have recorded that 2 seconds. I don't know how detailed that is that we know about yet, but trying to justify why it's on an older phone, so it's more of a, like an interface change.
But it's a nice interface change.
Yeah,
the same.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Obviously, there's a question about burst photos, because normally when you long press the shutter button, it just takes a burst. Well, they've basically changed it now. So if you long press and slide to the left, then it does a burst. If you long press, it just takes the video for the what they call quick take. And then if you long press the button and swipe to the right, it locks, so it goes into video mode and you don't have to hold the button down anymore. So that's kind of how they've done
that's
that.
Cool.
So it bursts to the left, hold it down for just a normal quick take, and then go to the right, it locks it in place.
That's kind of a cool build on just the iPhone 10 and later gesture interface, where you start to look at tap as a picture, tap and slide to the left as burst, tap and slide to the right as like hold the video. And then you've also got that like clip control, where if you just want to do a short clip, then you just press and hold, and that's your video until you let your finger off. That's really cool. I like that.
Yeah. They also obviously talked about their next generation chip. They're still keeping the Bionic name, because I guess the underlying architecture is still the same. But obviously it's the A13 Bionic. And rather amusingly, they showed charts of faster CPU and faster GPU, but none of the charts were labeled. So they clearly wasn't so impressive that they wanted to put a number on it. But if you look at the length of the bars, it's basically like 20% improvement, essentially. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's still industry leading,
which is a bigger it's a bigger change than the S4 to S5 chip in the Apple Watch, which is 0%
improvement. That is true. Yes. If it's a bigger change than doing nothing at all. Yes. Right. Yeah. And obviously Apple made a big point about this, like their chips are already, at least in benchmarks, you know, outrunning the competition, so any improvement is gains on top of that. So what I like to see is more battery life, and impressively, all of the new phones actually have more battery life than the iPhone XR. Obviously, this one is, you know, an iPhone XR in a new body. Essentially, it's the LCD screen, etc. But even this one gets an hour extra battery life, according to their stats. Bloomberg made a big deal of the multi-angle Face ID stuff in the run-up to the event. They did mention Face ID in the keynote, and it is obviously listed in the specs. It just kind of says faster Face ID and more lenient. It doesn't necessarily say you can put it on a table and unlock. So that's the kind of thing that will require, you know, hands-on testing.
They don't call it like next-gen Face ID like they did with Touch ID, which is something that we discussed. Will they do that? And then water and dust resistance. Is this a label change? Is this a warranty change? Or is it just more of the same?
It is more of the same. It's gone from like 1 meter for 30 minutes to 2 meters for 30 minutes. And they say that the glass is even more shatterproof now. But there's no warranty cover for going underwater or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they're pushing you to take underwater pictures or anything. Because they can't back it up with a warranty. They're just using it as a backstop. So if you do get into trouble, hopefully your phone will be okay. But I don't put much stead in the waterproofing stuff until any company can actually back it up in the warranty information, mm-hmm. like how they do with the Apple Watch, right?
Yeah.
And then I guess most surprisingly on the iPhone 11 was the price.
Yeah.
Apple was surprised a lot on pricing on this thing. So obviously the iPhone XR was $750. Which was lower than the $1,000 price point of the iPhone X and beyond, but still higher than like the iPhone 8 Plus was $699, and then before the iPhone 8, the base phones were $650. So the iPhone 11, despite adding a decent swath of features, has actually dropped in price by $50. So the iPhone XR was $750, and now the iPhone 11 is $699. And they actually made a big deal about how the iPhone XR was the best-selling phone of the year, mm-hmm. like all year long. And so it's kind of interesting to me that they reduced the price on it at all.
Well,
almost in a way, I was expecting them to like reduce the price on the $1,000 ones that seem to be more sluggishly selling. It seems like the XR has picked up to a decent pace, mm-hmm. but they clearly think they can go lower with it.
But it can't be the top selling phone, but then also be fueled by aggressive trade-in marketing at a reduced rate. Where you had a trade-in rate, but then they made it even more at first for a limited time, and then that price is stuck for the XR. It did not stick with the XS and XS Max. But now maybe they can reduce the trade-in cost because they built in a lower price anyway. And so you've got, you know, a better buying experience because there's fewer strings attached. Like, you don't have this big banner that says from $449 you know, with the trade-in, and you can just have a more appealing price up front that you can also reduce with a trade-in, but it doesn't need to be promotional trade-in, and it doesn't need to be, you know, strings attached. You've got to give us a modern iPhone in return for this. So I think it's probably a lot around the trade-in promotion stuff and how that price, the trade-in price, eventually became locked in, not promotional. Now they can just have a lower cost. The fact that they've added new features and everything, like it's clearly an upgrade over the 10R to the 11. That's impressive that you get a much better phone. Still no OLED screen, but like camera wise, battery wise, you're improved all around. At a lower cost is pretty cool. And the fact that the 10R we'll discuss later on is in the lineup too, you know, it makes it even more impressive.
Yeah, I'm sure they've run the numbers on it and it must make sense for them, especially maybe in like China where that's where they seem to be able, they need to be able to shift phones essentially. Mm-hmm. So, and everyone likes to talk about how, you know, China has plenty of Chinese competition with Android phones selling for much, much cheaper. So maybe that's how they're going to stimulate it by just pounding out iPhone 11 sales at $700. But still, for the customer, it's great. It's $50 cheaper. And, you know, there's essentially no downsides over the XR. It's just all better.
Yeah, yeah.
Including the battery, which was already considered like best in class. Like for the 10S, 10R cycle, there were tech reviewers who would pick the 10R just because of the battery life situation. Like that kind of highlighted a problem with the iPhone lineup in that even the most hardcore tech reviewers were not going for the best phones. They were going for the one with the best battery life, and that was the $750 one. So now the battery life situation is way better across the board.
Yeah, speaking of batteries and charging, there was this last minute Ming-Chi Kuo report days before the event, you know, that backtracked on, not backtracked, but just updated on a rumor that I think started with Ming-Chi Kuo, which was, you know, supply chain based, that Apple was developing, you know, two-way wireless charging, where you not only can charge your phone wirelessly on a cheap pad, but you can charge out wirelessly as well. You know, probably with like AirPods, maybe an Apple Watch at some point, but at least AirPods, if not another phone. And at the last, you know, kind of hour, there was this Ming-Chi Kuo report that said that probably won't happen, or it may not happen. And clearly that had been the plan for longer than the last hour. But, you know, that was backed up by Mark Gurman's reporting at Bloomberg, you know, a week prior. And then he echoed and said, I've heard the same, that it's might not come. So that didn't happen at this event. There's no matching the Samsung phones that have charging out wirelessly. It's only charging in wirelessly. And I'm curious if, like, you know, I think the reasons in the quote report were that they're not satisfied with the charging speed rate.
They said charging efficiency.
Charging efficiently. Yeah. Okay, so there's just wasted energy over transmission that's not at their standards. I'm curious if if there's any change in the wireless coils, you know, for charging in the phone that like the teardown would reveal. That would help explain the last minute change there. But Ming-Chi Kuo is a supply chain analyst. He isn't like sources with an Apple say. He's like, you know, this is what's in the supply chain. This is who to invest in based on that. So it would be interesting, really interesting if there were upgrades in the coils that they just didn't market because they're not going to turn it on.
You remember the third gen iPod Touch that was meant to have a front facing camera in it, and then at the very last minute they got rid of it?
Yeah.
And then when people did teardowns, there was like literally
a hole
inside the chassis of where the camera was going to be.
Right.
If you tear down an iPhone 11, you could just see where the reverse wireless charging pad was going to be.
I'm really curious. Like, even if the component is different, then you know, it's interesting. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Now, last thing I'll say on the iPhone 11 section, which was something I noted in Slack during the coverage and presentation, was that Kaiyan did a terrific job as like a new face on stage, doing the presentation in a way that was like much more lively and energetic than Phil Schiller doing the 10R last year and even the 10S last year. And I just assumed that she would continue doing the iPhone 11 Pro, which ended up being Phil Schiller. But even so, like changing the voices for two different phone, you know, kind of collections was a good call. And then she aced it in terms of just her presentation. Like it was nowhere near as dry as last year's iPhone presentation.
Yeah. I mean, it would be hard to be worse than last year's presentation, but overall this keynote was much better.
Yes.
Much better done than the 2018 event. So, the iPhone Pro, or specifically the iPhone 11 Pro,
yeah,
and iPhone 11 Pro Max, which are the names.
Which are totally fine names. I think they are. It's fine.
Yeah, these were the names that I was expecting it to be.
Uh-huh.
I think it's perfectly fine. It is kind of a mouthful that there's now like four separate words for iPhone 11 Pro Max. But realistically, you're not going to be saying iPhone 11 Pro Max that often. After the first couple of months of them being on the market, people will know what you mean. If you say the Pro Max, people know what you mean.
Even
if people just say the Max, people will know what you mean.
Yeah, if you just go to Pro and no number, then you're going to just gonna replace that with the year, you know, or and if you did iPhone 11 and iPhone a Pro, then you'd say the one release with 11. Like, it would just become 11 Pro. So I think this is totally fine for the name. And I'll also say, before we really get into it, that I you know, we had one question on Twitter: what happens, you know, next year? iPhone 11R, iPhone 11S Pro, you know, iPhone 11S Pro Max. I don't think we even get there. I think we go from 11 to 12, like we did from 7 to 8, because the rumors so far are redesign next year, new screen sizes, bigger and smaller, 5G maybe. So I think those are all worthy of a 12, you know, number, not an S or an R. And
I agree,
even if they did an S next year, it would, I don't think it'd be 11R, it would be iPhone 11S, 11S Pro, 11S Pro Max, because the Pro becomes the change there, not the R versus S. The only difference is S is a bigger number or letter than R, you know, or later in the alphabet. So.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm just happy in general that we can say, I know the 10 are still alive, but we can start saying goodbye to Roman numerals, because 10, 10R, 10S, like, everyone just called them X's. Mm-hmm. It was kind of annoying all the time through. 11, 12, so much more elegant and simple. And obviously, there's going to be a lot of controversy about whether these phones justify the Pro. We've talked about this before. I don't want to go through it again. Like, Apple call stuff Pro as the high-end version.
But that didn't stop Phil Schiller from trying to justify calling it Pro. Like, even if we think it's okay,
no matter. They know what's going to happen. Everyone in the press is going to be like, here's Pro, 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 and they want to back it up. But, you know, they were talking about the display being Pro, and the display is essentially identical to the iPhone X display, really. Yeah. Like, although, like, it's not. They do have wider dynamic range, so it is, you know, slightly nicer.
It made comparisons to the $5,000 display, the Pro XDR display.
Yeah, they call it Super Retina XDR now. Like, yeah. Come on, Apple. But anyway.
You're better than that. But.
It has a matte textured finish on the back. Obviously, it's still
gloss. Which is not found on the 11, right? Those are glossy backs.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The 11 Pro is matte, and it comes in a new, like, dark green. They call it midnight green, space gray, silver, and a gold. Now, all of these colors do look different now because of the texture change. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the green?
Well, a few things about the green. I guess three things total. The first thing is, if you're going to do a new color, they've done four metals before, where they've had, a version of black, a version of silver, gold, as in like yellow gold and like rose gold with a more pinkish tone to it. Then they combine golds to just be single gold, new gold. So this isn't the first time they've had like four metal colors, but it is the first new color since they've played around with golds. Like, they've not done like, let's call it bronze, or, you know, some other tone like that. Or even like, let's not do a version of gray. Let's do a true black. To go green is a very interesting color, to be the first new color in years that's not for the colorful lineup. Like, why not a dark blue or a dark red, or like something had to inform them to do green, and I'm not sure what it is. The other thing is that this did leak from an incredible, as in not credible, source. It's an incredible source on Reddit. It was like a random Reddit post that was like some worker in China was exposed to all these different things. And one of the things is that not just the 10R colors will be different this year with the 11, but that the high-end phones, the 10S replacements, will have a dark green option, like a forest green option. And I don't know where green, you know, becomes midnight green, like maybe when trees are in the dark, but they did this, and it's not for me. I'm often attracted to new colors for the sake of change, and you know I like that. But this is one that I think has to be like, you like this color a lot, and that's why you're choosing it, not because it's new. Because I think there will be enough, you know, people turned off by it that they just go with the other colors anyway. In reaction to the event, I've seen people like it. It's probably, you're on one side or the other, you're not like in between, but the numbers of people that want this phone are high. So there must be some data and just like no knowledge of people like a dark green color. I recall like years ago on the Conan O'Brien like late night TV show, just this basic joke about the color of his car was like dark green, and how like he's a celebrity, but his car is like very basic and like kind of, you know, not even like black or white or silver, but like dark green of all colors, and that just being like a joke on the show. And so I call back to that on with this. I've also seen like it said that. I guess there was at least a study that showed that smarter people, I don't know if it's like maybe like based on like, you know, your higher levels of education, but they tend to go for green cars. I don't see a lot of like dark green cars on the road though. And to me, it kind of has...
That's because no one's smart.
That's true. I guess smart is extraordinary, not ordinary, but...
That sounds like a survey conducted by, like, BuzzFeed.
Yeah, I know. It was before BuzzFeed. But but to me, at a glance, the green is, like, it's not the kind of... Like, I think green is a really cool color in the 5C, but it was, like, more, like, vibrant lime green and not, like, this, like, forest green. And to me, I kind of see, like, my first color there that I reference is, like, the color of, like, bread mold. But I also see people see in, like army green, which is a cool color and a cool vibe. So... to each their own. Like titanium, I'm not sold on it, but I'm not going to knock it. It's just not for me. What about you?
Yeah, I see the army green okay. every time I look at it. And for me, that's a turn off. Okay. Like, nothing against the army, but I don't really want to be associated with the army. And the green is not, it's not my cup of tea. I did ask on Twitter, just like openly, like, does anyone actually like the green? And I'd say I got, like, quite a lot of responses in the affirmative. So, clearly, some people do like it, so go for it. But I'm going to stick to space gray. Boring old space
gray. That is the correct call. Unless you prefer the way silver looks or gold looks, space gray is the correct call. Unless you prefer the way green looks, you know, to each their own. There is this thing that we might have even brought up on the show, but the way the cases are made, that the camera bump is so large, you know, this year, and not just like thick and but it sounds expansive, like it's a big square on the back of the phone, that the camera cutout on the cases, you will be able to tell at a glance what color the phone is, even if you cover it with a non-clear case, because the camera bump is color matched to the phone. It's part of the glass, not black, as some of the bad mock-ups showed. That shows you what color your phone is. So even though it's...
Yeah, you'll see the color in the gaps between the camera lenses.
Basically. Isn't it glossy, though, and not frosted where the camera is? So that's what looks different about
yeah.
it?
Yeah. They do like a two-tone look. And again, this camera is also... You know, melded from a single
piece of glass. Is it a bump? Like, the lenses are bumps, but is the area of the square around it, is it a dive, or is it also a bump over the glass? Because I've seen pictures that make it look like a little bit of both, but I think it's like, it's a dive inward, right?
It is a bump. The closest comparison is like the iPhone 7 Plus, right? How that kind of that aluminium was curved for the dual camera, so it kind of pushed upwards. There's that tier of bump, and then the cameras protrude out of that bump.
Okay. Yeah, I see it on the website now. Yeah, some of the pictures are misleading for some reason, like the hands-on ones.
Obviously, we've seen the iPhone 11 camera design since January, thanks to Unleaked, and the final design, shockingly, is exactly the same as what we expected it to be. I do not think it looks any better or any worse than the leaked renders. I'd say it's about as mediocrely okay as ever, if that makes sense. I didn't like, oh, now I'm enlightened to the triple camera design. They didn't have anything in the slides like directly addressing why is it a triangle? Why isn't it not just like a symmetric square or anything like that? They obviously talk about the camera, which we'll get to, but they didn't have anything specific about the design. But equally, they're not hiding it. Like, all the pictures of the iPhone 11 Pro are just laser-focused, zoomed in on the camera lens. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's, like, obnoxious. It's not beautiful, though. It's not the best back of an iPhone we've had. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's fair. Yeah, it's not pretty. It is ugly. It's also a good camera. Like, they've had to do this for reasons, you know, and there are cool features associated with it. I think it's also fair to say, like, if you just look at the phones, the fronts of them look the same, like except for the green option. Like, I sent you a picture and I was like, look at the radical new iPhone 11 Pro, you know.
It's just a picture from the front.
Yeah, and you can tell no difference, you know. The back you can, but the thing that's different is visually weird, if not ugly. But you don't spend all day looking at the back of the phone, so... I would not have a problem owning this phone. You won't have a problem owning this phone. You can't cover it with a case, you know, the camera part, because that defeats the purpose. But the parts that you do spend all day looking at look the same. I think, like, if you had to pick between, like, the notch or the the array of cameras, I would pick the notch going away before I'd pick the array of cameras going away in this.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, because that you do see, and it's more obtrusive than this is. This might.
Yeah, and the notch, and like the notch is a good comparison, right? Like that's a concession to get infrared facial recognition.
Yeah.
Working, right? They could have a much smaller notch and just have a little, like what we see on the Samsung phones, a little like circle for the camera. But because they want the Face ID stuff, they have to have that, you know, that big notch area. Mm-hmm. And in an ideal world, it would just be a clean line and it would just be screen to screen, edge to edge. Similarly with the camera, you know, Jeff Williams, Phil Schiller aren't sitting in a room going, we want three camera holes in the back. Like, they're not, they're, this looks the best. It's obviously, we want a really, really good camera. What can we do to achieve that? Mm-hmm. And of course, I wish they would have given it like at least one line. Like if they just said, even if it wasn't true, I'd just be happy with myself. They just went like, to make all this deep fusion and smart HDR possible, the cameras are specially calibrated in a triangular arrangement. And then I'd be like, okay, whatever.
So you want a reason why it isn't three cameras aligned either vertically or horizontally? Why is it?
Yeah, or like, or what annoys me is because it's in a rectangle, right? Mm-hmm. I want that in each, so there's four corners of the rectangle, yeah. Right? You could put a camera, and then put the flash in the bottom right corner. And that is how the Huawei phone does it. And I think that layout is better than putting a triangle inside a square and dotting the flash and the mic in like random dots above the ultra wide. So assuming there isn't a technical reason, I believe that's how they should have done it.
Yeah. Well, I applaud you for having this opinion both before and after the keynote. So, you know, we don't change our mind and say, oh, now that we've seen it, it's not so bad. It is bad. It's not a deal breaker, but it's not the best. You wouldn't pick this if you were just designing, you know, for function over form over function. This is definitely function over form. But
we evaluated in January, mm-hmm. and now it looks the same as it did in January, and we have the same opinions.
Yeah, so. And I know you were keen on saying when you look at the mock-ups, trust the ones that are color matched on the bump and not the ones that are black, because they will have the same color. And there were those like cheaper later mock-ups that showed it black, and there was confusion then about, well, what would we get? And we get the color ones, and you were early on saying discount those, that it's the color bumps that you'll get, right?
Yeah, and 100% color bumps look better than black bumps.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
The camera system, we'll get used to it. And then we'll see what they do next year. Maybe they have four cameras.
And it'll come to the iPad and it'll be everywhere.
Yeah. So for the camera system, obviously you have, they say new lenses on all three. So upgraded across the board. There's the 1.8 aperture, which is the default wide camera with now 100% focus pixels. Before we had some percentage of focus pixels. Now we've got 100% focus pixels. The telephoto camera has a larger aperture now. That's the 2x one. And then obviously they have the ultra wide on the Pro as well with the same 120 degree field of view. And you can smoothly switch between 0.5x, 1x and 2x in the camera just by sliding your finger. And they dynamically, they said they pair the calibration of these lenses at the factory and then in real time depending on the scene, because a problem you could have when you transition from camera to camera, and you kind of see this on the dual camera today, is like the white balance and the tone when you switch, when it does that jump from the one zoom to the next, is apparent, right? And they claim that because they're basically running image data from all three cameras simultaneously, even if you're only seeing one at a time, that transition will be a lot smoother. So it should almost just look like you're zooming into a single image, mm-hmm. or at least close to that.
Not to get sucked into the what makes this pro, because Tiller did say, and this is a pro camera, it's the first one we've called pro. Explain in, you know, kind of bullet points, the differences between 11 and 11 Pro. So you've got two cameras, you've got three cameras. What are the like exact differences that you get there?
The ultra wide camera.
Yeah.
That's not, like, it's not even a joke. Like that, as far as I can tell, the cameras in the 11 that are there are the same as the cameras in the 11 Pro, but you get the addition of the ultra, you get the addition of three, right? The ultra wide, normal and 2x, and not just the pair, and the same algorithms in Smart HDR are available on the 11 and the 11 Pro. It's just they have more data, sensor data to work with when they have three cameras rather than two. Mm. Even the deep fusion thing, which is like a neural network based image production algorithm thingy, which called quote mad computational photography science.
Yes.
That, despite being in the iPhone 11 Pro section, will be available on the iPhone 11 as well.
Yeah.
When that's a feature that's coming later this year. They haven't said when.
Yeah.
Same with the night mode, by the way. The night mode doesn't ship at launch. So it's kind of like portrait mode originally, right? iPhone 7 Plus, it took them a month to get the portrait mode working,
mm-hmm.
and shipped. So same deal here with this deep fusion thing, which is basically a really, really advanced version of Smart HDR. And then the night camera as well. Like, I don't think anyone truly has a grasp on what deep fusion does differently to Smart HDR. I think it's kind of like, with Smart HDR, there's always a fixed process that an image goes through when it's made. It takes an image at a high exposure, an image at a low exposure, an image at normal exposure, and then it follows predefined rules and logic to blend those together. Whereas I think what they're doing with the quote-unquote deep fusion thing is all the decision-making is made by a neural network. It's made by machine learning. So it's a more sophisticated approach to making a photo because the exact same set of steps aren't happening every single time. Like, on the fly, depending on the circumstances, the phone is essentially making, you know, pixel by pixel decisions about what should be where, and that should theoretically result in higher detail, higher quality imagery. We will have to wait to test that properly to see if it's actually, you know, a noticeable change.
Yeah.
But that is, I think, what deep fusion is, but that is available on Pro and the 11 only.
Yeah.
So your question about, you know, what the difference between the 11 and the 11 Pro camera, the ultra wide, the three cameras versus two really is it. Like, the actual lenses themselves appear to be identical.
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused by your answer, but I just wanted to double clarify there. So on the 11, you have the normal camera and the ultra-wide camera, but no 2x zoom. And on the 11 Pro, you have normal, ultra-wide, which is new, and then you've got 2x, which you've had before on dual cameras.
Yeah, the telephoto.
So it's like to call this camera Pro, you can justify that by saying it can use all three camera sensors to make a computationally better image. Through intelligence.
Yeah, whereas the 11 can only use two sensors to do the same thing.
But at a glance, if you don't consider that in, then it's that it's Pro because it's also got last year's mode where you can do optical 2x. So it just kind of sells the fact that the 11 is a good phone too. Yeah, a good camera system too.
Yeah, honestly, like, they could have made the 11 worse more than they did.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
To make the comparison to the Pro more extreme, and they didn't choose to do that.
Because the way if you're looking at the 11 online, like on the Apple website, they have the camera section, and they're like 12 megapixel wide, 12 megapixel ultra wide, and there's a button to compare with iPhone 11 Pro, and that pulls in like the product page from the 11, and it says iPhone 11 Pro has the same wide ultra wide cameras along with a new telephoto camera. And that kind of implies, like, the telephoto is new, but it's this is a new version of the telephoto lens, when really...
They said it's got larger aperture and stuff, so it can collect more information. Because that was a problem on the 10 and the 10S.
Yeah, zoom was darker, right? Grainier.
Yeah, exactly. Zoom was darker and more grainy and stuff. So a lot of the time, you didn't really want to zoom because it wouldn't be as nice. And actually, the software would intelligently pick a lot of the time to just digital zoom the normal camera and not to use the telephoto camera because it was worse quality and wouldn't suit the environment.
Yeah. And they do, this is kind of clever. They say that clever framing. This triple camera system gives you a combined 4x optical zoom range for more framing options. And that's not to say that you can go from 1x to 2x to 4x, but that you go from like 2x to 1x to like negative whatever x. It's that you've got that
0.5.
Yeah, that zoomed out frame instead. So yeah, it's clever. Oh, okay. Well, you've got a grasp on that it's not optical zoom on the 11, and that the only difference in the 11 and 11 Pro is that the 11 Pro does have optical zoom, and then computationally it can use all three sensors instead of all two sensors or both sensors. So okay, I have a grasp on that now.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, but that's the situation.
That is what they did. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And then for the like the pro video stuff, they repeated obviously a lot of the explanation from the iPhone 11 section, extended range 4K 60, blah, blah, blah. But they did a demo of an update to Filmic Pro, which kind of showed off the fact that it can, that the phone can drive all three cameras at the same time. In fact, you can get camera data from the front camera as well.
Mm-hmm.
So in this cameras, Filmic Pro app, yeah, they had the front camera recording and the back camera recording, and like while they were going, they could switch between ultra wide, zoom, none, and just keep flicking between the three whilst, and then maybe record the ultra wide and the telephoto together, like multiple streams coming in at once. And you know, that's a pretty rare thing to see. Like most phones, you have to switch modes for that to be possible.
Yeah, and the built-in camera won't do that, even though it's capable of doing that, and that is part of the SDK that lets third-party apps do that, like Filmic Pro. Is that right?
Yeah, the thing that the default camera does is that UI thing where it's showing the ultra-wide image data in the like transparent areas.
Yeah, but you never see like front and back together, for example.
Yeah, exactly. That's not available in the camera.
And then for the back camera, or for the 11, or I guess for either of these really, then with Filmic Pro, you could you both record the back and front cameras? Like if you're doing an interview sort of thing, and you want to have the host and then the interviewee, you could do that?
Yep.
That's cool.
Yep.
That's neat.
Yeah, that was their demo.
Right.
You probably phased out a little bit, because it was also, that was like straight after the bit where they had the one of the engineers who was making the i13 Bionic talk about like machine learning mumbo jumbo for like 5 minutes. That was the worst part of the entire event.
I've seen the event 3 times so far, and we're only like a day and a half removed from it. But when I watch that, I'm distracted every time by the, like, I think his line, that demoer's line of a prisoner's line, that we can take what we're soon to all have in our pockets and then do this with it. And then they cut to the Filmic Pro sort of like environment studio where they're making a movie, and then they've got the phone from the pocket, but it's like on this big rig, like giant tripod on wheels, and it's like it's, maybe you don't say pocket when you have this big rig in front of it, but at any rate,
they could have done the whole section without having the A13 explanation. Like, I'm sorry, I know it's really good engineering, but you don't need you don't need an engineer or something to explain that stuff. You don't need Phil Schiller to explain that stuff. Just say the A13 can do all this stuff. It's really better. You don't need to like talk about transistor count. I hate when they talk about transistor counts.
It's kind of
sections of chip.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you were to describe HomeKit to someone and you started describing how the framework works, like how it's, you know, under the hood stuff, and it's like, I don't care. You're like, that doesn't ever faze me. So they've done that 2 years in a row now with their chip stuff, which they're very excited about. Again, not that I'm sore, but there's nothing to say about the watch chip, because it's the same this year as last year in terms of the speed. So, yeah. And when we had our hunch that there'd be no new watch this year, based on the chip alone, then one of the pushbacks to that from some people was that Apple's chip team is just too obsessed with improvements year over year, that they wouldn't be, you know, resting this year on the watch chip, that there's surely some more performance to eke out. But that didn't happen. but back to the iPhone.
So yeah, battery life is even better, because this is my, like, one of my big requests even since the iPhone 10 came out, right, was that the 5.8-inch phone, whether you're on the 10 or the 10S, the battery life on that one is kind of mediocre. The battery life on the Max is decent, and then obviously the 10R has the best battery life, which is like decent plus. And so what they've done this year is actually increased battery life on both the 5.8-inch and the 6.5-inch substantially. So taking the from iPhone 10S, the iPhone 11 Pro gets 4 hours more battery, according to Apple, and the Max, compared to iPhone XS Max, gets 5 hours more.
How did they do that?
Well, actually, if you look in the tech specs, the iPhone 11 Pro is thicker, again.
Yeah.
It's bigger and thicker by like 0.5 of a millimeter or like half a millimeter.
This makes like the iPhone 6 like the thinnest phone ever from Apple.
Yeah, it still is. Yeah. It still is. So I'm sure it's got a bigger battery in there. They'll have minified and miniaturized some of the other components in there to make room for more battery.
And there's no 3D touch.
No 3D touch.
Which is a layer.
Yeah, exactly. which you would think normally, intuitively, you think that, oh, okay, they can make the phone thinner, but because it's actually got thicker, that implies they're just stuffing it with battery. Sure. Part of the mumbo jumbo of the A13 stuff was how they're getting a higher performance with lower power. So I'm sure the A13 chip is more efficient as well. So it's kind of basically a mixture of those two, because essentially now all three phones, whether you're talking about the 11 or the 11 Pros, they all have significantly better battery than the iPhone XR. And the iPhone XR got highly regarded as having like stellar battery life across the whole of this year. And so now that experience can be felt by everyone, whether you're paying $1,000 or whether you're paying $699. So that is like a huge improvement. Because cameras and battery life, I think they're like the top two things that real people care about. Like, they want their phones to last longer and they want the camera to be good. And people love the XR primarily because of the battery, like, even in spite of the screen being worse and everything else. Mm-hmm. Like, the battery life is a really, really, really good boost. And now they've got that across the whole line.
Yeah. Plus 5, that's impressive for the Max phone, because the Max already had more battery than the 10S did, right? And it wasn't caught up with the 10R, but now they've added 5 hours to that, which is, I mean, you think of 5 more hours on your phone, you know, what is a battery case add for you? You know, sometimes it's about that. So that's pretty impressive.
Didn't they announce smart battery cases?
Yeah, no, they didn't.
But they didn't announce them last year, and then they brought them in like January. So
yeah,
they could show up.
But they did do clear cases for all phones now, and not just the 10R. So now, you know, obviously the 11, and they have non-clear cases for the 11, which was not the case for the 10R. I think they're just white and black. But then for the 11 Pro and 11 Pro Max, you've got clear cases too, which I assume are still the bad, like, thick and, like, hard-to-press buttons ones. But I'm very curious if they've improved that year over year, because they should.
That was basically the highlights. They also had, the 18-watt USB-C charger does come included with the Pros, not the 11. Mm-hmm. So, woohoo, great, right. the $699, you're still getting the 5-watt charger.
You're going to need it with that 5 extra hours of battery. You know, it's got to be a big battery.
Yeah, it's okay forever, You didn't have the faster one. Again, they mentioned faster Face ID, offhand, better water resistance, and Wi-Fi 6. But that was like footnotes in the show. They really talked about the camera first and foremost, which is what we're expecting. But who knows if the camera changes are really, really substantial until we buy it and try it. So that's kind of like the open question. One thing that both the 11 and the 11 Pro do include, but Apple did not mention at all and kind of hides on the website as well, is that they include the U1 chip, which is described in the tech specs as being for spatial location awareness.
Whoa,
exactly. So, at the moment, the only thing this chip is used for is a new AirDrop experience that is coming in iOS 13.1, so that's September 30th. Mm-hmm. And it's a new AirDrop UI, and basically, it's the same as old AirDrop, except if your phone notices you're pointing it at another iPhone 11, it can prioritize that person in the list. So basically, it knows which phones are closest to you exactly, and if you're facing it. So if you were both 5 meters apart on the left and the right, but you turn to the left, it would know that the phone on the left is closer to you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like accurate indoor location for all devices that are U1 chip.
So I'm thinking, like, what problem does this solve? And in my own home with AirDrop, we often see, like, here's the Mac and the iPad and the iPhone and the other Mac and iPad and the kids' iPads, and it's like the big list of people. You know, with that new UI, now you've got to tap into, you get like one suggestion in the friends row, and there's like this UI with like a red label badge with a number on it that you tap in to see. So a little bit slower to get to like the full list. And that's just in my own home. But then if you factor in like, public places like office spaces and airports where, AirDrop is prevalent on iPhones, you know, there's just like maybe dozens of people, then you can slim down, you know, your options there by aiming it at each other. If you have an iPhone 11 or later, that's pretty cool. That's what we have so far. They've always done like the letter and the number based on like what it's for. Like, M1 is like, cause it's a motion coprocessor that, you know, counted steps and then went beyond that, I suppose. And then they've done W1 for wireless, then H1 for headphones. You must be for the ultra wide band that this is using.
Yeah, it must be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's what we have there so far.
Yeah, we'll come back to that.
Okay.
So that is essentially the proposition. No big surprises. The prices are the same for the Pro. It's $999, $1099. So the 11 got cheaper. The Pros stay the same price. Ship September 20th. And funnily, they changed the pre-order time to 5 a.m. Pacific time. So you can get up slightly later and not be as stressed out in the middle of the night.
Yeah, in the U.S., that becomes... So 5 a.m. California, 6 a.m. in like the Utah area, 7 a.m. in like the Chicago area, and then 5, 6, 7, 8 a.m. in on the Eastern time zone. For you, what is that time?
That is 1 p.m., so literally lunchtime.
You get to sleep in if you want to, and then rush to pre-order. You could always do it at like, what, 8 o'clock, and now it's 1?
Yeah, it was 8 o'clock before, which is normally fine as well, because it's like I was getting up.
Yeah.
That's good. And now 1 p.m., I guess, slightly better.
And it was midnight Pacific before, which was, 12 a.m., 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m. So, like, if you're in the East Coast, and it's, like, literally the middle of the night, you set an alarm. If you're in the West Coast, then you might just stay up a little bit later and then go to sleep after like, 12:15 or so. I've already seen people on the West Coast complain that now you don't just like kind of go to bed a little bit later, but you've got to set an alarm to wake up early. But it's Apple's decision. And I did wonder on like my third viewing of the keynote if that's they're just doing everything they can to, drive upgrades and sales and make it a little bit easier for in every way that they can. And that's what this is. And they did the thing with the watch where you can buy it same day, like as soon as the event was over, you could go and order it, even though it's the same release day. I don't know why the difference there, but they've done that with iPads before too, or you can order them on like whatever the release date is. I guess that's just because like, you might capture like more sales that way by making people that are excited by the event, like impulsively purchase or like think about it and like purchase on like day two or three. Without losing any sales there, and then with the phone, it is beneficial to build up that anticipation, and they've made
well. And the phone has more orchestration because you need like all the carriers to go or start their pre-orders at the same time and everything. Like, there's a much bigger.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
So surely everyone is on the 5 a.m. time though, Pacific.
Yeah, I assume so. Everyone will be changed to that now. So iPhone 7 and iPhone XS discontinued as we expected.
Yeah.
XR stays around.
As we expected.
$599, another aggressive price point.
Yeah, cheaper than we expected, but as we expected. And in all colors still? So there's not just like black and white, but it's all the colors?
Yeah, all colors.
So if you want a blue phone, you don't get the 11, you get the XR.
And save $100.
Yeah. And then the 8.
And obviously the XR last week was $150 more expensive. So taking the XR to $599 is really aggressive.
Yeah, it's really, really compelling. And then the 8 at $450. The 8 is the same as the 10 in terms of like the specs. It's the home button situation is different, but it's a
design. An OLED, obviously.
It's a really good phone for $450. Like I questioned if the 7 was a good phone and people would let me know, it's okay. It's just kind of getting slow now. But I feel like the 8 was a leap forward in terms of like the processor and everything. And so, it won't have the latest stuff, but it's for $450, that's a good phone.
And then rather funnily, they did a retail update as the last thing.
Yeah.
So they brought out Deidre O'Brien for the first time, right? That was cool to see her on stage.
Yeah.
And they did something that we weren't expecting, but it's actually really cool, called Apple Watch Studio.
Yeah, so I was covering Apple Watch stories naturally for the event, and I thought I was way finished, by then. And then Apple Watch Studio comes around, I'm like, okay, I'll do that as well. And this is like, it kind of builds on something we saw happen last year, where they started packaging the watch and the band separately, even when you bought them pre-configured, which was the only way you could buy them. But it was like this, like, you call it the McDonald's Happy Meal box that, like, unwraps to show the packaging for the watch itself and the packaging for the band itself. But you couldn't mix and match them still. This year, you can in many ways. Not always, but both in line or in stores and online, there is the Apple Watch Studio, where you can say, you sort of like the old, like, mix your look, you know, UI on the web, where you can sort of like make a unique combination, but that you could buy separately.
What do they call it? Like the Apple Watch Interactive Gallery.
Now you can do that when you purchase your watch. And it's pretty, like, you pick your collection, you know, do you want the Apple Watch or the Apple Watch Nike Plus or the Apple Watch Hermes? And then within that collection, you can pick what band you want. So if you've got Nike Plus, then you get to pick between the Nike Plus bands or the Nike bands. So those are the reflective loops or the perforated hole Nike support bands. With Hermes, you've got the different leather bands, but you get to pick. And then with the aluminum ones, with the Apple Watch, then it kind of varies by material, but at least in the titanium in addition, believe the choices there are sport loops or leather loops, which is a neat, you know, they're both loops of different materials. And then they come with a sport band. With the aluminum and stainless steel is a little bit different there, but you still get to mix and match there, which is really cool. And it's nice that it's both online and in stores, because you can see that being an online only thing because it's so easy to ship out that way. But they've at least planned for this to happen in store to some level. You know, it can't be as infinite as online, I suppose, but it's a good step forward.
Yeah, and it was kind of premeditated by the Apple Watch Series 4, like, packaging, mm-hmm. where the watch and the band come separately.
Yeah, and if you recall, our Michael Stieber, who is our retail expert, he had this report about how it wasn't nationwide or, like, worldwide, but there were, like, 1 to 4 stores that were sort of not piloting, but unique to those stores, you could do the presentation was different, where the watches weren't below glass, they were above glass, that you could touch them, and then they were, like, I think presented separately, and, you know, you see, like, just the cases, like, in this little, like, slots, and seems to be, like, built on that. So this is a good move. About time.
Yeah. And Stieber was, of course, very pleased that they have finally announced the reopening of Apple Fifth Avenue, September 20th, same day as the phones. They said it's, like, their largest store ever, more than doubled in size underground. And we obviously saw at the weekend that all the construction had ended and they brought it down, and currently the big cube has got, like, this iridescent film on it, which is, like, reflective and stuff. That's just for the launch period. It's like, woohoo! And then it'll eventually go back to being the, you know, the more subdued clear glass.
Yeah.
But this store has been in refurbishment since January 2017.
And it's had an opening target date publicly that they didn't meet. And, like, one of the presentations, like, Stieber sent me this awesome comparison image of Angela Arendt at a keynote for Apple with the cube behind her, just, like, talking about when it's going to reopen. And it never did, you know, it just took longer and longer. Not to say it was her fault, but that it was just an ambitious project that took longer than they clearly expected. And then he sent me the picture with DJ O'Brien, the same, you know, render behind her, but it's like the zoom was a little bit different. And his joke was, like, the trees have grown since then. It's like, and it's just, I was like, one of her only appearances too. And it's like, now it's Deirdre's first appearance. So, but that's cool. I mean, they've been stuck in that, like temporary store nearby for so long. And then that store infamously had an issue with bed bugs. So I'm happy for the Fifth Avenue Apple Store to finally have its glory back. I've been to it when it was the old store. I will be happy to return to it as a new store. I've never been to it as a closed store, though. And Stieber had discovered that the old store will close on the 17th, I believe. That's the last day it'll be open. And then the new store, of course, opens on the 20th on iPhone 11 launch day. And so there'll be you know, a couple of days where there won't be a store there. Although New York has plenty. But if you wanted to see the old temporary store, you've got a few days left before it's gone forever. No bed bugs included anymore.
And then Tim came back to say thank you and goodbye.
Yeah, and there was this anticipation that there'd be one more thing, because, I mean, as we were covering the event, we hit the 1 hour mark, and it was like, this is pretty impressive. They're packing a lot of things at a fast pace here. And then they were at the iPhone, you know, section, and they were wrapping up, and I'm like, we've got, like, 30 minutes left, 20 minutes left, and that was it. And there was that whole...
Because it's 1 hour 40 is what we clocked in at, and typically Apple events are aimed for 2 hours, so it's like...
They've had some that are a little bit under, but I don't think any this short, and they've had some that are even a few minutes over. People complain about those, but...
They've had, like, a couple that are clearly intended to be, like, hour long, like they're, like, an hour and 10 minutes, whereas this one was clearly planned at some stage to be 2 hours, I think.
I mean, there's always something about an event that you can, like, you know, guess what was supposed to have happened and what actually did happen. You know, the evidence here it comes from, like, a far-fetched source, you know, the @coin account, which is reliable at spec leaks that are probably attached to, like, Apple's marketing website, because it's the product names and, like, detailed specs that you could find on, like, the specs page. But we were credulous at, does he really have access to, like, the script of the keynote? And maybe, but it didn't happen. There was not one more thing. There was not even, like, 20 more minutes of things. It was just thank you and goodbye, not even, like, a musical performance. Which, like, maybe that's what didn't come through. Who knows? But
I think in this case, it's pretty obvious. Now, whether they were going to say one more thing or not, who knows? Mm-hmm. But I think I personally think it's pretty obvious that the tags, the tile tracker tags got cut.
Mm.
Because that's why the U1 chip is in the phones. Like, they're going to do, that's what's going to power the AR experience, where you can just hold up your phone and it will have, like, a direct arrow in the room as to where your item is. Like, that's what the U1 chip is for, the ultra wideband stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And no Apple tag. They had time for it. They were leading up to it. They didn't mention the U1 chip on stage at all, and then the website description is like, for the AirDrop experience and some other cool things in the future. Like, this is almost exactly what it says. Like, I think tags were meant to be at this event, and they are missing in action.
Yeah, I mean, leading up to the event, we had the report on sleep tracking, which detailed how it will work, which is really compelling. We've already seen the Bloomberg report from Mark Gurman that says sleep tracking in 2020, but not the details of how it will work. And so that was interesting. And it was almost like, you know, bedtime mode for the watch. But I thought maybe that's what they'll show, you know, and there'll be some angle to it. Like, you know, we're going to do a health study there, but they didn't do that. And maybe that'll be next year's hardware that will be required for it for some reason. Then I thought maybe there's so much leaking about the AR headset, and they've been beating the AR kit drum for so long now that maybe what we'll see is a sneak peek preview of what that will be like next year. You know, because it was 5 years ago when the Apple Watch had that big preview half a year before it launched. But they didn't do any of that. So, well. But they didn't do it. Overall, though, I think it was a really terrific event. Like, you know, if you weren't hoping for tags or a preview of an unleashed product, you know, it was presented at a great pace. There were like four different game demos throughout it, but it was good presenters overall, and not nearly as dry as last year's watch, or excuse me, not watch was terrific. Last year's iPhone presentation.
Yeah, the watch was good. Everything else was dry.
In many ways, like, so the arcade and the TV stuff was like recap plus give you two new details. And they did a good job of doing that too. So I like the event.
Yeah. And obviously everyone's happy when prices are going down or being lower than people predicted. So that always helps raise the mood.
Yeah, eventually we'll have like super reasonable prices for all the products except for iCloud. Like, we'll still have 5 gigabytes for free and, like, you know, $10 a month for the good plan. So they're on the right track with the other stuff. The subscription stuff looks to be more compelling in terms of price, and the iPhones, they didn't raise the price on the Pro phones, and they lowered the price on the base model phone, you know, closer to where it used to be. So it's the good stuff. And then the Series 3 price is like, I guess last year the price wasn't so compelling that I would say, yeah, get the Series 3 if you're on a budget, you know. Now
it's what, $269?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, something like that. And which is, you know, if it's on sale, maybe, but like I've paid $200 for like secondhand Series 3 watches, you know, or refurbished Series 3 watches. So it's really compelling for like a brand new one. And it's not bad hardware, you know, especially seeing how people react to the Series 4 and now 5, you know, they're not always blown away by the differences. And I went a whole year with Series 3 being the latest watch, and I was blown away by it. So, you know, just for that perspective of don't look at, you know, the best, but look at, you know, what's accessible, then it's a really, really good product. So I'm glad it's still there and that for that price.
Yep. Yeah, I'd say the event went roughly as expected, with surprises being Apple Watch always on display, obviously.
Yeah, a big surprise.
The price situation. And I think we both agree, right? There's going to be an October event.
Oh, yeah. There was nothing on Mac Pro, but they don't need to do that. That can just be an update to the website. You know, now it's available to order and configure, or it's going to be available next week or whatever. Same for the display. You know, there's not much configuration there. We already know the prices for that. If the 16-inch MacBook Pro, as reported, is this year, that's definitely event-worthy. They got the small iPad out of the way, and it does ship this month. It's basically October 1st, but it's September 30th, right? So it's you know, yeah, before the end of the year, before the end of the month even. So they could have like a mid-October event for things coming. There's no need to mention TV Plus again there, unless they want to show us Steven Spielberg trailers. Arcade will have been launched by then, so you don't need to recap that. But you can do MacBook. If there's anything to do with the iPad Pros, even if there's a spec bump, they can do that then. The tag stuff, you know, the tracker stuff, that's event worthy. It's a new area. And that can be it. And also, you know, we had that late hunch that there could be an Apple TV at the event. Mm-hmm. And there was not. And that wasn't like, we know it will be there, but it was like the unreleased account references something. Rambo found something, had an anonymous tip. And then the fact that there are upgrades that could be had in terms of the HDMI spec that relates to arcade and gaming. They can still do that in an October event and release it before the TV Plus service launches, because that's November 1st. And so they could do an Apple TV update then, and that would qualify you for the free year, even if you don't buy a Mac, iPhone, iPad. You know, you get the new Apple TV for whatever price, and there's your free year right there. So I can totally see that event. I think it's hard to do more than 1 hour for a MacBook and tags, but if it's a MacBook tags and Apple TV, that's easier to do, especially if there's iPads involved. If it's just tags, I've seen people say that's event worthy, but I think tags are like, you know, here's a weird new quirky thing with some like some press, you know.
No, I disagree with you on that. I think they're going to make a big deal out of the tags when they come.
They will, but like if it's only tags, would you do one event for that? Because it's so minor to me.
Well, they're not going to do tags on its own, but 16-inch MacBook Pro, tags, and then they can happily show you some more Apple TV trailers.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even mean that flippantly. Like,
I know.
Time to fill now, they'll just show you some more Apple TV stuff.
Yeah, I know you made the like not joke on Twitter and people thought it was a joke, but it's totally serious that they can always fill time with a new trailer, you know, intentionally. Because
and they can talk about the content lineup that's coming in December, mm-hmm. right? Like, they can always fill time. Like, 16-inch MacBook Pro, tags, maybe iPad Pro updates if they do exist, right? We've heard about spec bump plus triple camera stuff. Like, October event, easy peasy.
Mm-hmm.
They can make it lower key. It won't be as big as the iPhone event, right? They can invite less people. Honestly, the 16-inch MacBook Pro is so much hype around it and anticipation. They could do like a Mac event that was just that, and then maybe some details about the Mac Pro and people would be happy.
That's true. And it doesn't have to be 2 hours or an hour and 40 minutes. They can do 1 hour flat, yeah, and that'd be okay. Like, what was it, the Chicago iPad event was like the 1 hour time frame? Surely that wasn't 2 hours.
I think it was an hour and a half.
Okay. Well, that's fair. So. All right. Well, I am with you. I think that there's nearly no doubt that there will be an October event. It's just a matter of what all will be in it. We'll see. But that definitely seems like that's the case. You know, it'd be hard. Or the alternative would be that there's not a new MacBook this year. If there's any MacBook, but there are tags, that's tricky for me to get around. But
I think they want tags as a holiday item.
That's a good point. It's you know, and there was this whole discussion on Twitter. Like, do you think it'll be subscription based or pay for the hardware and as part of the feature or what? And you know, I don't really have an opinion on that, but I mean, I think you did, right?
Yeah, I think if they were going to move like Find My to a subscription, they would have kind of like flagged it with the software updates that we have now. Maybe making offline finding, which is how the tags will, you know, that's what the tags are going to rely on, right? The beacon network of nearby Bluetooth from all the iOS devices. They could have made that a subscription in June and introduce people to that in that way. Because they didn't do that, I'm kind of guessing that the tags are just going to be like $49 each, mm-hmm. and you just buy them and yeah. you use them, and then they'll be more expensive than people want. I know people were like, "Oh, they should be so cheap. They should be like three for a tenner." Like, it's not going to happen, right?
Yeah.
These chips are more technologically advanced than the Tile stuff. They're more than just Bluetooth. They'll have a U1 chip in them. They'll do some cool stuff, right? You'll have the AR experience. They'll be like, I would guess $49 each, mm-hmm. and you can buy one or two, put one in your keys, put one in your luggage. Boom, boom, boom. Everyone's happy.
We had some good feedback from people last week about ways that they both use Tile today and the accuracy of the network effect on those already, and then how you would use an Apple product. And one of my favorites was like on your pet, because I have lost a cat before, and I've searched outside for a cat that was inside under an entertainment center hiding. So having literally a tag on their collar, I would totally do for a pet. Keys, sure, wallet, maybe, you know, but I like that one from readers or listeners was pets, of course. And then also there was feedback about the quality and accuracy of Tiles today. But we also, I think we also both agree that iPhone, Apple could do things that they won't allow other companies to do, even if it isn't fair. That would make Apple's more compelling for people.
Yeah, a lot of people kick back at me for saying like, oh, the Find My network, that kind of chicken head problem is a big issue. They said, well, I've got 10 tags and I'm perfectly fine just using around my house, which is fine. Like, I get it, right? Okay, cool. But the Apple tag will be able to do all of that, plus all this other stuff that the third-party manufacturers don't have access to.
Yeah,
so that's kind of where I was going with
that. Yeah, the cool example, though, was what luggage, like, lost, or, like, luggage on an airplane, you could tell that it was aborted.
Someone told me that they put Tiles on their luggage, and then when they get on the plane, they can actually pick up the Bluetooth signal from, obviously, like, the storage bays of the plane, so yeah. they can know for sure that their bag has actually got on the right plane.
Yeah.
That's, like, cool.
And then I imagine, like, when you do pick up, too, for your luggage, you can sort of get a sense of, like, it's coming soon.
And it's on. Yeah, and you can, like, make it beep or whatever, yeah. exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, cool. All right, well, that is our extended special edition version of the Happy
Hour
podcast.
That's our marathon.
Yeah, that's it. I'm going to go drink some water and then do one more podcast tonight. And also, the only thing I want to promote this week, I'm not sure if I mentioned it last week, but I'm doing this fundraising effort through the website Just Giving, where I'm running half marathon in November at Disney World on the 3rd. So I'll have finished all of my Apple TV Plus content by the 3rd. And it's a 13.1 marathon, so it's 3.1 miles. And so what I'm doing is I'm trying to raise $1,300 for my local animal shelter to make a donation this fall for them. And I did mention it last week, but I want to mention it again and through the fundraiser effort, because there was great listener feedback, response since last week. I could tell that when the show went out, there were donations coming in. And so thanks for anyone who has donated already. Literally, like, donating $1 moves the needle, and it sends me joy, and it makes me want to train even harder for this half marathon. So thanks to everyone who supported that so far. And if you haven't yet, the marathon's on November the 3rd, so it's sort of your deadline right there.
If you're buying a new iPhone, you can afford to donate, even if it's just a few dollars. Like, yeah. Charity is good.
Yep. And I greatly appreciate it. So thanks to everyone for that. That is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can. I'm at Apollo Zach on Twitter and Instagram. Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZA Mayo.
Yeah, we had someone say that people won't know what you mean by saying BZA Mayo, Z in the English version. And
right, I'm gonna enumerate it once.
Yes.
And then I'm never doing it again.
Okay.
BZAMAYO. If you didn't understand what I've been saying for the last 200 episodes, there you go.
BZAMAYO. Well, the only thing I want to say about that is that you have about 6,000 more followers on Twitter than I do, so someone must be getting it. And it's not a given that people would understand that Apollo Zach is APOLLOZAC, because at Starbucks, I always get asked, is it with a K or an H? And it's just ZAC. So catch me up to Mayo. I deserve it. He doesn't. And if you have any feedback for the show, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. We love new listeners who subscribe. It helps us know people are enjoying the show. You can also rate us on iTunes or Apple Podcasts with a star rating or a written review. That helps more people discover the show. And if you listen in Overcast, you can use the star to recommend the podcast to other Overcast users automatically. And that also helps more people discover the show. With all that being said, we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.